Well, it's an oscillation, if that's the right word to use, between thinking, as many people do, that this is remarkably straightforward. I'm referring, lest you've been under a rock for the last few days, to the case of Peter Mandelson, Jeffrey Epstein and Keir Starmer, a point on a triangle that the Prime Minister never wanted to be and didn't need to become, and thinking that it is actually rather complicated. For example, everybody knew that Keir Starmer knew that Peter Mandelson had been in touch with Epstein after his release from jail. Everybody knew that. It was reported in the Financial Times years and years ago. So, what do you think? Is this really simple, or is there complication?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock. Sir Keir Starmer will attempt to move on from the Peter Mandelson scandal this morning with a speech about rebuilding pride in communities. The government's been forced to hand over files on the peer's appointment as US ambassador after a backlash from Labour MPs. Speaking to LBC this morning, the Cabinet Minister Steve Reid denied suggestions that the Prime Minister's in office but not in power.
The Prime Minister sacked Peter Mandelson on the spot when he found out he'd been lied to. It could not have been more decisive. If all of us could tell when a liar was lying, liars wouldn't exist.
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch told LBC she believes Sir Keir Starmer is on borrowed time.
I think that there's so much more to come. I think that those papers are going to show all sorts of terrible decision-making and bad judgment by the Labour government. I think Keir Starmer is only going to get into more trouble.
In other news this morning, a ban on asylum seekers using taxis to get to most medical appointments has come into force. The government's acted following concerns that some were travelling long distances costing hundreds of pounds. Donald Trump has conceded that federal immigration agents could use a softer touch. 700 of them are now being pulled out of Minnesota. Two US citizens were shot and killed by ICE agents last month. The number of people in hospital in England with norovirus has fallen for the first time since the start of the year. Latest NHS figures show they filled an average of 904 hospital beds each day last week. That's down 5% from the previous week's average of 950. The Bank of England's expected to hold interest rates at 3.75% this lunchtime. Analysts say there's concern about inflation, which was 3.4% in December. And the latest audience figures show LBC is still the UK's leading commercial radio talk brand, with a record 3.4 million people listening. And 1.4 million of you are now tuning in to James O'Brien every week. So, thank you. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 43 at 10,359. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with outbreaks of rain, some heavy showers for the south of England, hill snow in the north, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandanger-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, okay. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 3 minutes after ten, and I guess it's one of those days when the news could move at a million miles an hour at breakneck speed while we are actually on air. I think it's unlikely that there'll be any major ructions. Keir Starmer, if you're not aware of this, is due to give a speech at 11 o'clock. I mean, as far as I can tell, a scheduled speech that he would have given anyway, but it certainly assumes, doesn't it, a level of interest that wasn't in place this time yesterday, actually, even before PMQs. But I think at the moment I'm minded to take that live. It would be quite weird not to. And if the speech is really boring, which is, of course, possible, then we will definitely return for the Q&As, which are unlikely to be. Shall we put some bets on this? Unlikely to be about the meat and drink of the speech that he's just delivered, and rather more likely to be about the absolute hot mess that he finds himself in this morning. And here's a line that I think is indisputable, and there may not be as much about this story that is indisputable as we initially think. It is a mess entirely of his own making, which means whatever prejudices or opinions you come to this story with, the one brick upon which we can all agree this story has been built is that it is a mess entirely of his own making. If there were any doubt about that, it was summarily removed yesterday for two reasons, which may be reasons of different magnitude, but which at this point in proceedings look very similar. The first is that he knew Peter Mandelson had maintained contact with Jeffrey Epstein long after, or certainly immediately after, Epstein had been jailed for procuring a minor, a child, somebody under 18, for prostitution. And that was one of only two charges that he copped to in what looks like the mother of all so-called plea deals. Incredibly soft punishment and an incredible number of allegations left unexamined and untried as a consequence of the deal that he struck. The second bit, which was a consequence of some uncharacteristically adroit questioning from Kemi Badenoch in the House of Commons yesterday, and you could describe what she faced as an open goal, but we're talking about Kemi Badenoch, so friend or foe would agree that there's no guarantee that she'd actually score, even if the goal was as wide as the Mersey Tunnel. But the security services had also told him that Peter Mandelson had maintained contact with Jeffrey Epstein after his conviction and incarceration. And I think at the moment the furthest we can go is that they had expressed concerns, which means that Peter Mandelson is called upon by Keir Starmer to assuage any concerns, to reassure the Prime Minister that the security services have nothing to worry about, and though they have flagged contact, I can assure you, Prime Minister, that the contact is minimal and over. In other words, if we are to take Keir Starmer at his word, which I think we can still do, you may disagree, if we are to take Keir Starmer at his word, Peter Mandelson lied through his teeth about the army of skeletons that were in the closet he shared with Jeffrey Epstein. And that's why I keep oscillating between thinking this is really simple and thinking that it's actually quite complex. When push comes to shove, that doesn't matter. You know, there's a sort of critical mass with politicians, with senior politicians walking the resignation tightrope. There's a critical mass at which the facts cease to matter. You can see long after the event that the facts cease to matter to some people. The idea that Boris Johnson was hounded out of Downing Street by his own party, having failed completely to cobble together the mother of all botched cabinets because he had a glass of wine or a slice of cake during lockdown, is a lie and a nonsense so spectacular that it is truly visible from space. But of course that is the nature of cults of personality. People can never admit that their hero has feet of clay. I mean, the list, if you want to go back to the partying with KGB agents, whatever it is that rendered Boris Johnson supremely unfit for office, you can take your pays, your money, you take your pick. But of course, as I just heard towards the end of Nick's show, you can find one or two people who will still cling to the carcass of that idiocy. That is a sort of critical mass. If you reach it, the facts cease to matter. In other words, however intellectually safe or sound Keir Starmer's defence may be, even if it is supported by the evidence that emerges when these documents are handed over to the Select Committee, another victory for Kemi Badenoch there, by the way. Make no mistake, Keir Starmer did not want to do that. And although it was pressure from his own MPs that forced his hand, it was pressure rather adroitly applied by Kemi Badenoch at PMQs yesterday that found the wound, that pressed the wound, pressed the scar. It won't matter, is what I'm saying. The nuance won't matter, the complexity won't matter if it reaches critical mass, if it reaches the point where people cannot conceive, MPs particularly, cannot conceive of going into battle at another general election years hence with Keir Starmer still in charge. And that's obviously the first and foremost question to ask this morning. It is the notion that his position has become untenable, and your view on that. Again, I would stress that our opinions are considerably more interesting if they've changed in the course of the last 24 or 48 hours, or whatever that figure may be. If you hated Keir Starmer yesterday and the day before and last year, and you still hate him today, then that's fine. If you thought Keir Starmer was the Messiah yesterday and the week before and indeed last year, and you still think he's the Messiah today, then that's fine. But there's no intellectual engagement with the story that explains the opinion you've arrived at. And it's, as ever on this programme, it's that intellectual engagement, that thoughtfulness, that interests me most. Because I think this is a more complicated story than some of the headlines perhaps allow. Let me tell you why. First and foremost, we are facing the very real possibility that the political career of a man who is not mentioned once, as far as I'm aware, in the Epstein files, could be ended by the Epstein files, while another political leader, who is mentioned at least 6,000 times, continues to swan around as if there is absolutely nothing to see here. It's just an observation. Donald Trump's administration is absolutely filled to the rafters with people who were incredibly close to Jeffrey Epstein. The role that Epstein played in promoting and sponsoring Steve Bannon's attempt to fill the European Parliament with far-right politicians who would do the bidding of the billionaires that backed him on issues like cryptocurrency is there in black and white. And Bannon, of course, has been an absolutely integral part both of Donald Trump's administration and original presidential campaign, and to hop over the Atlantic, Nigel Farage's continuing career as a carbuncle on the backside of British politics. So that's just weird, right? A bloke who's not even in the files at all could be finished by this, by the files. A bloke who's in them 6,000 times, and remember, we still haven't seen half of them, so you'd be an absolute fool not to take very long odds on him being in them a heck of a lot more, is currently managing to make like Teflon, even though, as we've said, many of his key consularies and closest allies were cozying up to Jeffrey Epstein long after even Peter Mandelson had cut contact. So that is just weird. Point one, weirdness. Starmer's not even in them. He could see his career end. People who are all over them are currently managing to do a pretty good impression of a non-stick frying pan. Point two, everybody knew. This is the bit I can't get past. And listen, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a bit confused and embarrassed by my own position on this. I can't actually remember what we were doing at the time of Peter Mandelson's original appointment, except largely, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this applied to friend and foe alike, largely praising the Prime Minister for making it's a word that popped up a lot yesterday, for making such a pragmatic appointment. The way we described it yesterday was that you set a thief to catch a thief. If you are dealing with a regime that is horribly morally corrupt, then the best thing you can do is be represented in that regime by somebody who has always walked a tightrope of questionable morality. You see, it's easy today to say, he was called the Prince of Darkness. How can anybody be surprised by this? But if you were to rewind to the original appointment, the fact that he was called the Prince of Darkness was a plus point on both his CV and the appointment. You see what I mean? That's two quite big nuances, complications, call them what you will. Everybody knew that he'd stayed in touch with Epstein. And the reason why I'm confused and embarrassed is, I don't know, I'm not even sitting in judgment on anybody else, but I don't know why I wasn't on my usual high horse with regard to this story and pointing out that he'd stayed friends. Maybe I missed it. Maybe we knew but didn't know. As Jim Pickard, the Financial Times journalist who literally told Keir Starmer that Peter Mandelson had stayed in touch with Jeffrey Epstein, explained to us yesterday, he feels a degree of almost bitterness about the fact that his 2,000-word story barely touched the sides of political or public consciousness. So let's rephrase that and say the knowledge was in the public domain. The continuing of the friendship was known. Whether you knew it or not, you could have done if you dug hard enough. And I can't remember whether I knew or not. And if I did know and I didn't kick off, then I'm afraid Well, that might be something to bring up at my next confession. I don't know why I wouldn't have kicked off about that, because nothing animates, infuriates or sickens me more than men exploiting children, men abusing children. So point one, how on earth can Starmer be on the hook for something when he is not even in the files and Donald Trump, for example, but there are plenty of others, is in them 6,000 times. Number two, how is he being retrospectively hung out to dry over knowledge that was already in the public domain? Which leads us to number three, and this is the bit that, the only bit we don't know, to paraphrase Donald Rumsfeld, this is the known unknown, which is what the security services told him. Because if the security services told him, we do not think you should appoint this man, then you are actually veering back into Boris Johnson territory, who was constantly trying to get people into the House of Lords that the security services had told him should have no business whatsoever in the UK Parliament. I mean, which brings us back, actually, to the parties operated by a former KGB spy that he loved to attend, and his close friendship and elevation to the House of Lords of that KGB spy's son. So, and of course, Boris Johnson didn't go for that either. But if the security services have said to Keir Starmer, which frankly I find unlikely but not impossible, that you must cut the umbilical, you must throw Peter Mandelson absolutely out of your contemplations and your considerations on this issue, because his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein is a concern to us. That brings us back to Andrew Marr's observations earlier this week that the fingerprints of Vladimir Putin appear to be all over the corpse of Jeffrey Epstein, not suggesting it had anything to do with his death, but that the likelihood that he was somehow an agent of the Kremlin, in the way, of course, that Nigel Farage's best mate Nathan Gill turned out to be, is not beyond reasonable doubt, is it? Plenty of people making that point, including Donald Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, referencing our very own Andrew Marr in his comments on this absolute actual subject earlier this week. So those seem to me to be three things. You, I hope, will have more. Phone lines will be open short. Well, they're open now, actually, if you want to book your place early. 0345 60 60 973. The obvious question, and for once the obvious question is one that I want to hear your answers to, but obviously I'm always more interested in the why of it than the what of it. So is Starmer's position now untenable? And of course, if so, why? And if not, why not? But I think that you will need to accommodate the second bit of this introduction into your answer. These three things. He's going to go, if he goes, despite not being in the Epstein files at all, while a man who is in them at least 6,000 times continues not only to claim that he's absolved by papers that include allegations too disgusting for me to repeat on national radio. Number two, everybody knew. It was not a secret that Mandelson had maintained contact with Epstein. It was known to everybody, including all of the commentators, journalists, pundits, colleagues, rivals in the House of Commons, who praised the original appointment. Guess who? I'll tell you who else praised it, which you might be a little bit surprised by, because he's almost certainly pretending that it never happened. Nigel Farage praised the appointment of Peter Mandelson as ambassador to the United States of America. And do you know why he praised him? Because he was very impressed by Peter Mandelson's performance when he was a European Union commissioner. Those are words that came out of Nigel Farage's mouth that he will be desperately pretending never came out of Nigel Farage's mouth in the coming days or weeks, if he hasn't already. So point one, he's going to go. If he goes, it will be despite not be. I'm sorry for giggling, but it is comical, right? How many times does Starmer appear in the papers? Zero. How many times does Donald Trump appear in the papers? 6,000. Who's in the most trouble over the papers? Yeah, it's the bloke who doesn't appear in them at all. That seems to me to be a complexity. Complexity number two. Everybody knew, or if they wanted to know, they could have known. So why are we all now retrospectively having a fit of the vapors and clutching our pearls over the maintenance of contact with Epstein when it was well established and well reported long before the events of this week and the release of the latest tranche of documents? And then in a distant third, because as I say, it's an unknown unknown, or a known unknown, actually, technically speaking, in a distant third, if it all hinges upon what the security services did or didn't tell Keir Starmer, then a lot of our other conversation and contemplation could be rendered moot by the end of the month. But That's why I began this introduction, almost as if I have a plan when I start burbling away at a couple of minutes after 10 o'clock in the morning, by reminding you of the power of critical mass, the inevitability of momentum, if you like, so that it could be the case that by the end of the month, or even perhaps the end of next week, and not beyond the realms of possibility that it's by the end of this week, the critical mass, the momentum could have reached such a stage with Keir Starmer from essentially within his own party, his own parliamentary party, or indeed his own conscience. It could be the case that none of the complexities, none of the nuances, none of the other matters will turn out to be of any importance whatsoever. Because once critical mass is achieved, the facts fall by the wayside and the feelings take over. And that is not a criticism or a condemnation or even a kind of a complaint. It's just how things work. It is how the cookie crumbles. Right, your turn. 0345 6060 973. Is Starmer's position now untenable? If not, why not? If so, why? And I keep oscillating. I guess in many ways it's the same question but with different answers. Is this really simple, or is this actually quite complicated? I can't wait to hear what you've got to say about this. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need, and if you hit those numbers now, you will get through. Who's going to be first? It's 20 past 10.
LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases, and that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Oh, hello, love. Good day.
Right. Thanks for joining this all-staff meeting.
It's just you and me.
So, I think that we need to revisit tonight's dinner plans.
Okay.
Busy day. A lot of KPIs. A lot of KPIs. Gonna need you to order some spaghetti, tomatoes, a bottle of white, and two sticky toffee puddings. Let's circle back after you've ordered an Uber Eats.
Sure.
When you've officed enough, Uber Eats, and get all your groceries delivered. Check out for terms and restrictions.
Big motoring world are big on choice. But what does that mean for you? Well, we have thousands of cars in stock. So let's say you want a Mini, an electric one, in black, with a panoramic roof, Apple CarPlay, heated leather seats, rear view camera. Yep, there it is. Being big means we're more likely to have the right car for you. Big motoring world, we're big on choice. See website for nearest store.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
This may not matter, but it matters that you know. I'm not exaggerating or inventing the enthusiasm with which the appointment of Peter Mandelson to the ambassadorship to Washington was reached by, for example, Michael Gove. Here is a headline from The Times, quoting the now editor of The Spectator. Michael Gove, : why Peter Mandelson is the best choice to handle Trump. In a wide-ranging interview, the former Conservative minister reveals his favourite Labour MPs and explains what he found absorbing about the US president. A Daily Mail columnist, Dan Hodges, ruthless, cynical and cunning, why Mandy is the perfect choice as US ambassador. I don't know whether they knew, but they should have known that all of these words, all of these warm words were written and spoken in a world where it was well known that Mandelson had maintained contact with Epstein. And that seems to me to be significant now. It could, of course, be overtaken by events. It could be overtaken by momentum. But it seems to me to be significant now. And it's why I think his position is probably tenable, probably safe for now. But I'm going to be very easily persuaded with powerful and cogent arguments this morning that it isn't. And you can make your powerful and cogent arguments on 0345 6060 973. Darren is in Hammersmith. Darren, what would you like to say?
Morning, James. How's it going?
Hello, mate. Very good.
I've got a slight stuff to say. Please just be a bit patient with me.
You can take all the time you want, Darren. And I mean, if it helps to sing, feel free to sing.
Thank you. I found myself today getting quite cross about this situation. And I think quite simply, the answer to your question is no, his position is not tenable. He has to go. And the reason why, I think, is a couple of reasons. Number one, he pitched himself for a long time as being this sort of the clean-up man for all these years of Tory corruption and sleaze. And number two, when he stood up yesterday and said the word yes, it was just like a big ba-dong moment for me. Well, I was just like, he can't stand there and continue to genuinely think he can make a judgment call at that. And thirdly, he is just now distracting the job of government. And I've not a Keir Starmer supporter, in the sense I didn't vote for him, but I've long been a person that doesn't think that we should just reactionary make people resign as because the new story doesn't suit us. And I've been one of the people saying, just calm down, let them get on with the job. They've got a really difficult job. At the moment, all that's happened is he's now the news story, and no one's getting on with any work. Today, yesterday was Cancer Day, and all we spoke about was this. Today, I heard the housing minister online on radio today announcing what would be a very good thing for local communities, overshadowed again by this. And all that happened is the housing minister today sounded just like the days after Dominic Cummings took his eyesight for a road. When these Tory ministers had to sacrifice their morals and their own souls to try to defend what everybody knows is indefensible. It's a disgrace. He's got to go.
This, just for the record, and I know you're a bit worried about your stammer when you started speaking, is an absolutely first-class contribution. You've covered almost all of the points that I tried to raise in my introduction, and that took me the best part of 20 minutes, mate. So, nice one. I pick you up on a couple of things. I don't actually have much argument with this guilt by association problem. I think that the Tories were at their very lowest when they defended Owen Paterson, when they literally got together to try to rewrite the rule book after he was found to have broken it. But that's where I'd push back a bit, in that Starmer hasn't, as things stand, actually broken any rules. And you don't know any more today about the appointment of Peter Mandelson than you knew when he made the appointment. I mean, if you weren't aware of what Jim Pickard and some others had reported, then that is forgivable and excusable. But nothing has emerged yet that changes the arithmetic of the appointment.
I think what we're doing now is, this is what's made me quite cross about this one from yesterday, is trying to be very cute about the morals that we all, as decent people, stand
by. No, but it was known at the time. It was known at the time. I think that's got to be relevant, hasn't it?
Well, of course, exactly. And
until it
isn't. You can't have both. You cannot sit there and say we would all disassociate ourselves with somebody who is a known paedophile on one hand, and then say actually we know that this is what he did, and we gave him a massive job anyway. You can't have both ways. Keir Starmer knows that. Everyone around him knows that. And him staying right now is the epitome of arrogance.
But everybody knew at the time. Michael Gove could have known at the time, should have known at the time. And he's saying Peter Mandelson is the best choice to handle Trump. Dan Hodges almost certainly did know. And he's saying that Mandy is the perfect man for the job. Our friend and colleague John Sopel writing, Peter Mandelson is a gamble as US ambassador, but exactly what we and Trump need. And I'm not criticising any of these men, because I'm pretty sure I said something similar. And the knowledge was there. I think we got a tiny bit of feedback in the background, Darren. But as I say, that was an absolutely first-class opener, because you covered all of the ground. And what you did, whether you intended to or not, I don't know, is pinpoint the power of momentum, the power of critical mass, in that I can sit here until until Mystery Hour at 12 noon today, just pointing out that everybody knew and everybody praised the appointment, but if critical mass is achieved, none of that will actually matter. And it may feel, in the great scheme of things, unfair, and historians may look back and say, how on earth did he end up being hung for this when the offence was public years previously? But it won't matter in the moment. I don't think we've reached that moment yet, but it's certainly well within the realms of possibility that we will. And it is, of course, the comments and the feelings of people like Darren that will contribute to that critical mass. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. No prizes for guessing what subject is under discussion today. We are questioning the tenability or otherwise of Keir Starmer's residency in Downing Street. And we are looking at the slightly different question of whether this is a complicated question at the moment or a simple one. And Darren's rather brilliant contribution notwithstanding, I still think it's a lot more complicated than many people allow. The time is 10:30 and Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Cabinet Minister Steve Reid has insisted Sir Keir Starmer is safe in his job. Some Labour MPs are angry at his decision to approve Peter Mandelson as US ambassador despite knowing about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The UK Health Security Agency says there's been 36 reports of children falling ill linked to recalled baby formula. Several batches of Nestlé products were recalled last month because of concerns they contained a toxin which can cause food poisoning. And the number of patients in hospital in England with norovirus has fallen for the first time since the start of the year. An average of 904 beds were filled with patients last week, down 5% on the previous week. LBC weather, cloudy for most with outbreaks of rain, heavy showers in southern England, hill snow in the north, a high of 11 degrees.
LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top. You know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Hello, mate. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Ever wondered if travelling solo could be the perfect way to meet other like-minded travellers? Or dreamed of exploring new countries in small groups led by the best local guides? Ever wondered what it feels like to sail on a ship dedicated exclusively to solo travellers? Or to travel the world knowing every detail has been expertly taken care of? Spend less and experience more with 10% off all Riviera Travel solo holidays in 2026. It's a wonder why you'd choose anyone else. Book today with Riviera Travel. Habitat and Atoll protected.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house, and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly. To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Aren't pets in a pickle? We know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. They're cute, they're chaos, and sometimes they get themselves into a pickle. That's why we offer fuss-free pet insurance policies with unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
It may not matter. And to be honest, it's up to you whether it matters or not. We are now in one of those moments of politics where the weight of public opinion will prove probably more important than anything else. And if the weight of public opinion concludes that Starmer's time is up, then Starmer's time is up, and the facts and the forensic analysis of the detail will not matter a jot. Two questions on the board at the moment. One is blindingly obvious. Is his position tenable or untenable? One speaks directly to that question. Is this more complicated? And some of the reasons why I think it might be include the fact that Donald Trump is all over the Epstein files. He still denies that he sent that birthday card, that it's almost impossible to come up with any reason why anybody else would fake a birthday card from Donald Trump to his then best friend. He's not no one's calling for him to go, and his administration is full of people who did exactly what Mandelson did. But crucially, the point I think that matters is that everybody knew this. A year ago, when the appointment was made, it had been well established and well reported that Mandelson had stayed friends with Epstein until he didn't, but that that friendship persisted after Epstein was released from a very soft jail sentence for some very hideous crimes. And that I think I'm going to add to the list of questions. It might be a bit theoretical. We've been through our records, and all we have really, unless someone wants to sit down and listen to all the shows that we were doing in January of last year, all we have is the running order. And Peter Mandelson isn't mentioned in the running orders of any of our programs until this week. Or until this scandal broke. I think that, like everybody else in the so-called commentariat, on both sides of the political divide, I felt that it was a good appointment precisely because of the dark arts that Peter Mandelson had practiced. Veronica in Norwich has been in touch to, well, first of all, to recommend the rather excellent Quiet Riot podcast, and on there, my friend Alex Andrea develops a point that we made yesterday. It could actually be worse, or better, depending on which way you look at it, in that Peter Mandelson may have received that nod partly because of his associations with Epstein. It puts him in a universe that is all over the White House. Why on earth have you given that man a job when he was such great mates with a paedophile? Well, have you seen who the president is? You think Mandelson and Epstein were mates? You should have a look at how close he was to Trump. And if you think that Epstein's crimes only started after Donald Trump fell out with him over an argument involving a young woman who had worked at Mar-a-Lago, then there's a bridge I'd like to sell you. So what if the reason why he got the job was not despite his associations with Epstein and that wider circle of gross men, many of whom now occupy the highest positions in Donald Trump's regime, what if he got the job because of his association with gross men who were in plum positions in Donald Trump's administration? Most obviously, of course, if you go back to the first administration, it would be Steve Bannon, who is literally boasting in these papers about how he's assembling a far-right coalition of European MPs led by Nigel Farage to essentially ensure that they can ride roughshod over any attempts to regulate cryptocurrency in the European Parliament. That'll be a big phone in about 5 years' time, I imagine, and we'll be sitting there here going, how did we not know that the only reason why these ghouls wanted power was so that they could do the bidding of shady billionaires poised to make fortunes out of cryptocurrency dysregulation? Well, how did nobody know? And on that occasion, at least, I'll be able to say, well, I did, and I said so. But I don't think I did call out Mandelson a year ago. And I wonder if anyone wants to have a go at why. Not me so much, but everybody, including me. Why was this not a story 12 months ago? Actually, that is a question I really want you to have a go at answering. Why was this not a story 12 months ago? Why, to the best of my knowledge, why did nobody complain about Mandelson's appointment on the grounds that he stayed friends with Jeffrey Epstein? There must have been somebody, and they deserve some credit today. So if you know who it was, or you can find who it was, then let me know and I'll give them the credit they so richly deserve, because I deserve none. I deserve none. Why didn't it matter a year ago, when it apparently matters so much now? You can understand Jim Pickard's frustration yesterday, can't you? The deputy political editor of the Sunday Times literally shouting this from the rooftops and being largely ignored. Up to and including the point when his boss George Parker, the political editor of the Financial Times, raised it with Mandelson. And Mandelson, I kid you not, literally told him to F off. F off. So, complication four, alongside the fact that everybody knew, alongside the fact that Starmer's barely in the file. Someone's told me he may appear once or twice as a consequence of the job that he had at the time, but certainly not on any social level. Number three, we still don't know that the security services cautioned against the appointment, merely that they were aware of the associations. And point number four then becomes, what if he got the job because he was close to the gross men now running America, and all of whom, or many, many of whom, had incredibly close relationships with Jeffrey Epstein long after he came out of jail? Most obviously, I think, Elon Musk, who, of course, was begging to go to the parties thrown by a man who had already been convicted of soliciting a minor for prostitution. Frank's in Liverpool. Frank, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello there. I can't really answer what you said last, except maybe a week can be a long time. And maybe that's what blurred our memories. But I think if I'd have, I mean, I was an optimistic scouter, but I think this could be the final straw for Starmer. Although I think if I'd have been in his position, I probably would have employed Mendelsohn to do that job.
You've nailed it. That's the point, isn't it? It looks like a good appointment. It looked like a good appointment a year ago. It still looked like a good appointment a year ago, but it looks like an absolutely outrageous appointment today.
Well, I don't know, though. I mean, Mendelsohn claimed that he really believed the man was innocent.
Yes, he did.
I could probably give him the benefit of the doubt, and I don't think Mendelsohn would have messed up again. I think he really thought this was saving his whole political life, this appointment as ambassador.
You are an optimistic scouser. I think we put a lot more effort into believing our friends are innocent of crimes than we do into believing our enemies are. So even if he receives the benefit of your doubt, it's a sort of willful generosity of spirit on his part, as opposed to an objective one, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you can't. You need to answer the final question.
I was in real trouble.
Yeah, I did too.
I mean, but this does feel like the final straw. I can't understand what they did with the fuel allowance. I mean, I was quite happy to lose it because I've got a second pension.
Sure.
But I never.
This is the biggest thing until
people who couldn't afford it.
Yeah, the latest polling shows that as by far the most salient element of the entire administration. The thing that the public were most aware of and most engaged with was the winter fuel allowance. The original announcement scores higher than the climb down, actually, which is the nature of politics. But I wonder whether you've unintentionally highlighted the real problem here, which is that you can't answer the other question, which is why does it matter so much now when nobody mentioned it a year ago?
I know.
Because you're saying he's got to go. He's got to go over something that didn't matter 12 months ago.
Yeah.
It's quite mad, that, right?
Yeah.
Well, listen, you're highlighting the fact that it is often the way that our opinions, and mine are the same, can be very strong. Our feelings can be very, very strong. But when you scratch the surface of them, they may not actually have the facts there to back it up. And that's not a criticism of you, because opinions are based more upon feelings quite often than facts. Nobody falls in love with anybody based on facts. And that, of course, is arguably the strongest opinion we ever hold in our lives. Frank, thank you. I'm adding that question to the mix, and I want genuine answers to it. It might be the most important question of the day. It might not be, but at the moment, why didn't this matter 12 months ago? The queue of people praising this appointment, including, I'm pretty certain, me, was long and, not so much me, influential. And it came from both sides of the House. Michael Gove praised the appointment. Nigel Farage praised the appointment. Various Labour grandees praised the appointment. Seems to me perfectly plausible that Mendelsohn got the job, not despite his associations with Epstein and his circle, but because of his associations with Epstein and his circle. So does anyone want to have a crack at why it didn't matter at all at the time, but it matters so much now? 0345 6060973 is the number you need. Because, listen, even if he goes, that's going to be quite a big epitaph, right? He went over something he did a year before he went that nobody complained about at the time, despite the fact there was no reason why they wouldn't or shouldn't have known about it. That's bonkers. At least I think it is, until you tell me otherwise. Sean is in Coventry. Sean, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. I don't think he should resign. And look, whilst I admit this is a blunder, a monumental one at that,
I'm a dog with a bone now, Sean. I should have warned you in advance. Because if it's a monumental blunder now, why wasn't it a monumental blunder 12 months ago?
Part of me thinks, did they think that any of this was going to come out in the severity that it did? And I think, did they think with the Epstein involved for that, do you know what? Maybe his name will be mentioned in it, but it won't be as bad as what else will come out.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're obviously right. That's answer one to the question, which is the association with Epstein was known, but not the extent of the association, in which case the question is, could Starmer have known the stuff that nobody knew and that Mandelson was lying about? And the answer is no. So he's going to go for being, what, naive and trusting, foolish and credulous, but not in any way cunning or corrupt.
No, and this is the point, though, and I think with Starmer leaving, the problem you've got, and this is kind of like macro-level stuff now, is that you've got to then have a cabinet reshuffle, right? You're looking at new PM, new cabinet, and you've undone 18 months' worth of work that you've done. And I was saying to your colleague earlier, I was like, look, what the Labour Party really struggle with is a really good PR person. They don't shout about the good stuff enough, and that's why when something bad happens, there's a massive torch on what's happened, and that's really negative. But they don't shout about all of the good stuff. Or if they do, it gets drowned out in the noise. And they need somebody to stop that happening.
Well, he's not done a very good job of that either, to be fair. But park that for a moment and refer back to the first caller this morning. And this, I think, quite powerful point that that the image, the sell, the offer that Starmer made to the British public consisted in large part of a clean sweep. Of a new approach, of an end to the obvious and blatant cronyism and corruption of Boris Johnson's regime. I mean, less so the absolute idiocy of Liz Truss's, but the idea that he was a stand-up guy, he was a straight man. I mean, that solely in the context of his moral dealings. And then he appointed Mandelson, who was considered even by his fans and admirers to be a very slippery character. That point there, if that's gone, if that balloon has burst, then what's left Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister?
Because I don't think it has, right? I mean, if you're going to go down that whataboutery route that I'm sure the Tories will go through now with was the guy, the naughty Tory who was chasing that girl around his kitchen, then you've got...
Prime Minister, mate. You can only really make comparisons at the very least with cabinet level politicians who committed. Huh? I don't know. I think he's dead now. So, but that's not anything like Prime Minister. So the parallels with Johnson are the only ones that are really going to sting. And he looked to the first caller, whose name temporarily eludes me, as if that gloss had been knocked off. And it's probably going to come down to that, Sean. You're on the other side of that particular line. He hasn't been fatally compromised by this, partly because no one can really explain why it matters so much today but didn't matter at all a year ago. And then on the other side of the line, you've got people who think he has been fatally compromised. And it may not be that they've got more powerful arguments than you to defend their position, but it doesn't matter because it's like scales. And it's about weight of opinion. It's sounding like quite an intelligent thing I did at the top of the show, talking about critical mass and momentum, but that is probably what it's going to boil down to. And I've not heard anything yet to persuade me otherwise, but the morning is young. In fact, it is only 10:47.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The Prime Minister appointed a man to one of the most senior roles in the British diplomatic hierarchy, a man that he knew had been in an ongoing relationship with a paedophile financier. Starmer is right to be angry, but why on earth would the Prime Minister choose to appoint this man knowing what he knew at the time? I find that really quite astounding.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with Mum again.
May all orcas stay with the mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost.
so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
Okay, done. Move that. And... oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is, 10 to 11, but it's also possibly Judgment Day for Keir Starmer. He's due to give a speech in about 10 minutes' time. And, I'm currently minded to take it live, albeit that it is scheduled to address issues of national pride and patriotism and opposition to the kind of division that has typified the country since 2016. And do you know what, actually, before I go to Simon in Bognor Regis, that's quite pertinent, isn't it, when you think about it? In that if he is holed below the waterline, if his credibility has been destroyed by this appointment, then everything he does is... diminished. Everything he does is polluted. It's somebody in UK politics needs to make a meaningful and sincere stand against division, by which we usually mean racism, as soon, because otherwise we're going to go the way that the United States of America has gone. I don't think we'll ever quite have police officers shooting people in the face for the crime of being foreign, but the direction of traffic is pretty easy to see and pretty easy to follow. And there are plenty of people in UK politics who look at what's happening in the United States of America and don't feel a chill in their compassionate Christian hearts. I'm talking about people who profess to be Christian, of course. Instead, they feel a degree of envy and excitement, a frisson of arousal at the thought of people being murdered for being foreign. Someone's going to have to make a stand against that sooner rather than later, and a stand that matters. But I wonder whether Starmer's ability to be that man, to be that person, to make that stand, gets undermined by this. One other thing, I do this for a living. And a couple of messages this morning suggesting that we're making too much of it. Not just us, of course, but the entire media and political establishment. And I think you're wrong, but I would say that, wouldn't I? Because I do this for a living. And you may be puzzled by the question that we stumbled into about 20 minutes ago, which is, why is it such a massive deal now when at the time of the appointment just 12 months ago, almost everybody praised it? I think Ian Hislop may have been fairly quick out of the blocks. Andrew Marr doing some incredible broadcasting at the moment, as you'd expect from one of the very, very best in the business. But I know he's had Ian on this week. I wasn't listening that night, but I think Ian Hislop was pretty clear at the time about the embarrassing or unsuitable nature of the appointment 12 months ago on the grounds that everybody knew who Peter Mandelson was. But the majority of commentators, of course, were saying it's precisely because we know exactly what Peter Mandelson is that makes him the perfect appointment for this job with this president in this regime full of people who thought Jeffrey Epstein was the bee's knees long after his conviction for soliciting a minor for prostitution. We talked almost exclusively this morning about men. Funny that. Except, of course, Sarah Ferguson, who, the more you read about it, the uglier that association and friendship becomes. But other than that, most of the women in this story are victims of men. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that represents. And of course, as a couple of people have pointed out, to hop back to the United States, you don't even have to be foreign to get shot by ICE anymore. Of course, you could just be opposed to the fact that they are shooting other people in the face. That's enough to get you shot as well. So there are the questions. January 2024, Jim Pickard, confronted Keir Starmer with this simple matter, with this simple fact, with this knowledge. A year later, February 25, George Parker of the Financial Times raised it with Mandelson and got told to F off, literally. And then fast forward another year to January, February 2026, and everything's falling apart. Let's have a little listen to Jim's encounter with Keir Starmer back in January of 2024, actually, because, well, it could hardly be more relevant, could it?
The FT did a report this summer on a JP Morgan report which suggested that Peter Mandelson had stayed at the New York townhouse of Jeffrey Epstein in 2009 when he was de facto deputy prime minister and while the financier was imprisoned for soliciting prostitution from a minor. Do you think that Lord Mandelson, who is of course a close political ally of yours, has some questions to answer?
On Peter Mandelson, look, and I do try to give pretty full answers in these sessions, I don't know any more than you do, and therefore there's not really much I can add to what you already know, I'm afraid. And, you know, that's simply the state of the affairs. Thank you, Jim.
Not good enough, really. Simon's in Bognor Regis. Simon, what made you pick up the phone?
Yeah, I think... thank you for taking my call. What I want to know is... yesterday at the dispatch box, Kerry Badenoch took until the last question to kind of nail it down. But the question really should have been, what did he know and when did he know it? Because he's not acting with integrity now, and his whole party line is being, we are the party of integrity with the party of politics with the grown-ups in the room, and they're not being the grown-ups in the room.
We don't know that. I mean, he was pretty relenting in his description of Mandelson having lied. So, I mean, all he will know on one level is what the security services told him, and on the other side of the fence, what Peter Mandelson told him. If he chose to believe Peter Mandelson over his security services, then he is an idiot. If he chose to ignore his security services because he was so desperate to appoint Peter Mandelson, then he is both an idiot and a Boris Johnson tribute act. But if the security services said nothing to refute the lies that Peter Mandelson told him, then he's clean.
Then why try and hide with or hide behind the national security and the foreign relationship side of things when he's saying we are not going to release these or we're going to try and make an amendment to our documents?
And this is point three. This is the idea that there might be something in there that he doesn't want to come out, but we're not going to know that until it does come out. And now we know that it is going to come out. So if it was, I mean, you might argue if it was that bad and he knew about it, he'd have gone already. So we're going to have to wait and see. Well, it's not, is it? That's the potential. That's the potential smoking gun. And it might become clear. The Metropolitan Police... Well, the Metropolitan Police came out yesterday and said exactly what he had said. Said, we don't want some of this stuff to be released because it might compromise our ability to prosecute Peter Mandelson, or words to that effect. Did you know that? Because that I haven't seen that widely reported.
No, I haven't seen that, but I do understand like the chain of evidence and the kind of disclosure of information. So, yes, he could hide behind that for a short time, but how long is that investigation going to go on for?
But that's up to the investigators, which he'll have nothing to do with. So there are two things here that I think are relevant. The first is there will be something in there that essentially embarrasses or humiliates the White House, and he has been pathetically keen to avoid embarrassing or humiliating the White House since he came to power. So it could speak even to the idea that Mandelson was appointed precisely because he had associations with Epstein, as did so many members of Donald Trump's administration. And let's not forget that Jeffrey Epstein was for a decade Donald Trump's best friend. So that could be the stuff that is of national security, because he talks more about trade than he did about espionage. And then you've got the second thing, which is the police confirming that if they are to pursue an investigation into Peter Mandelson, then they will want some of the stuff that the cabinet office is in possession of to remain secret, presumably because if it was made public, it could prejudice a trial. So I take your point. But it's not quite, well, it's certainly not a smoking gun. It might be a gun. It might be an unloaded gun. I think I'm stretching this analogy a little bit too far. But you lead us at the end of that hour to those two central points, which we began the hour with. The question of point three. What's in it? What did they know that we currently don't know? And if that isn't damning, then he's played this appallingly, because it shouldn't be a career-ending position that he's found himself in, but the momentum might have reached such a point by then that even though the documents do the things I've just suggested or don't do any of the things that Simon's just suggested, it already looks too bad to retreat from. We will hear his speech after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, an inquiry has found the deaths of at least 30 people who died while attempting to cross the English Channel could have been prevented. Their inflatable vessel overturned in November 2021 during one of the deadliest small boat crossings on record. Only two people survived and were found almost 12 hours after they called for help. Inquiry Chair Sir Brian Cranston has been outlining his findings.
HM Coast Guard issued a May Day relay broadcast, but a nearby French naval vessel, the Flamand, did not respond. Meanwhile, at around 1:30 a.m, HM Coast Guard had tasked a border force cutter, the Valiant. The Valiant did not leave the port of Dover until 2:22 a.m. and took another hour to reach the last known location of Winston Charlie.
The Cabinet Minister Steve Reid has insisted Sir Keir Starmer is safe in his job. Some Labour MPs are angry at the decision to approve Peter Mandelson as ambassador to Washington, despite knowing about his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Sir Keir says Lord Mandelson lied repeatedly about the extent of their relationship. The Conservative peer Lord Wolfson says he thinks the Prime Minister's days in office are numbered.
The Prime Minister started PMQs yesterday as a Prime Minister under fire, and he ended it as Prime Minister in name only. You could almost feel the authority seeping away. Yesterday they were witnessing, I think, the political death of the Prime Minister.
There have been 36 reports of children in the UK suffering suspected toxin poisoning linked to baby formula recalls. Several batches of SMA and Aptamil products were recalled last month. The number of people in hospital in England with norovirus has fallen for the first time since the start of the year. Latest NHS figures show they filled an average of 904 hospital beds each day last week. And researchers say testing period blood for signs of cervical cancer could be a new way of screening for the disease. A study in China has suggested it could be accurate and less invasive compared with current methods. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 31 at 10,370. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with outbreaks of rain, some heavy showers for the south of England, some hill snow in the north, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
I think two things are probably linked, and it's not something that is particularly pretty. I don't think I've taken a... Have I taken a call from a woman yet today? I don't always notice this. It's the nature of public opinionising, actually, is that men are always persuaded. And by the way, this is an absolutely textbook example of the pot commenting on the blackness of the kettle. Always much more persuaded us men that our opinions are both interesting and important than many women are. But the question that I'm now most interested in, perhaps, moving forward, is why this didn't matter a year ago. I've got a horrible feeling that women may know the answer to that question, and that men arguing over how significant this is and who's to blame and whether or not it's nuanced and how could anybody... That is grist to their mill, proof, if you like, that there is a huge gulf between us human beings when it comes to the severity and the importance of the kind of crimes that Jeffrey Epstein was committing. Oh, that's horrible. Why didn't this matter so much a year ago? Because Epstein's victims didn't matter that much a year ago. Virginia Giuffre went, of course, to her grave, essentially feeling that she had been abused twice, once by her abusers and second by the response of the public or the media to her allegations and her claims. Why didn't this matter more a year ago? 0345 60 60 973 is a question that some of us may not actually like the answer to. So here is a list, and again, all of the commentators that I listed earlier in admiration of Peter Mandelson's appointment were men. Jim Pickard raising that point to Keir Starmer, and Keir Starmer essentially speaking for all the men in politics and media. Yeah, he stayed friends with a paedophile, but you know. But you know what? 0345 60 60 973. Mandelson himself, he was asked a little bit later by Jim's boss, George Parker, the in fact, why don't you have a listen to that, by the political editor at the Financial Times, raising the point again in the month of his appointment, the month after his appointment. So Pickard makes the point in January of 2024, and in February of 2025, George Parker, in Peter Mandelson's company, does this.
The FT did a report this summer on a JP Morgan report which suggested that Peter Mandelson had stayed at the New York townhouse of Jeffrey Epstein in 2009, when he was de facto deputy prime minister, and while the financier was imprisoned for soliciting prostitution from a minor. Do you think that Lord Mandelson, who is, of course, a close political ally of yours, has some questions to answer?
On Peter Mandelson, look, and I do try to give pretty full answers in these sessions, I don't know any more than you do, and therefore there's not really much I can add to what you already know, I'm afraid. And you know, that's simply the state of the affairs. Thank you, Jim.
Should have known more, shouldn't he? That wasn't... The George Parker intervention isn't on tape, my bad. But Mandelson, when asked similar questions by another Financial Times political journalist, was pretty unequivocal in what he thought about the questioning. He told George Parker to F off. Starmer obviously should have known more. His defence presumably is, all I know is what Peter Mandelson told me. But as the caller before the news reminded us, we're also going to find out what the security services told him. I don't think there's going to be a smoking gun there. But I could, of course, be wrong. And I'm also far from persuaded that it matters. Keir Starmer is preparing to give a speech. And we will certainly take the beginning of it, and we may stay with it for the duration, and we will definitely return to the room where it happens when he begins to take questions from the assembled journalists, none of whom, of course, will ask this question. Why didn't it matter a year ago? 0345 60 60 973. I think a few of you reminded me that Private Eye did, and I normally take a sort of almost a form of moral guidance from Private Eye, and indeed from the editor Ian Hislop. They are a rare example of moral probity in a hideous universe, but I didn't. I'm 99.9% certain that I didn't. I don't think we even did a phone-in on it. So why didn't we care enough about this a year ago? Sarah is in Tunbridge. Sarah, what would you like to say?
Why didn't we care? Well, people like me did. I admit I've always loathed the man. And when in 1998 and then 2001, when he's dodgy with money, I was outraged. And then when he's back again. And I was absolutely outraged when he got that job. A perfectly decent woman was working there. I'll tell That's you why it, nobody cared. Because it was women who had complained, and everyone just likes to just almost shake their shoulders and go, well, they could have been telling the truth, they might have been. And no one has really, really, up to now, believed them. And I think it didn't matter. And also, what you said earlier, them basically the orange one and Mandelson being of the same the same ilk. I'm sorry, they're both, in my opinion, horribly corrupt. And, you know, I suppose Starmer is as feeble as the next person. And thought, okay, well, he'll make sure we keep these bloody tariffs. And at 5% or 15 or whatever they were, having never been there before. And so none of it matters. So now,
Hang on, because I mean, listen, I'm not unpicking your position, but I'm interested in your admission at the outset that you've always loathed Mandelson. So this was what is this of a piece with Mandelson's unpleasantness or embedded misogyny or both?
Well, no, there are lots of perfectly decent men around, so I won't say.
I meant more systemic, but anyway, speaking of Keir Starmer, he is now giving the scheduled speech, and let's dip into it.
I entered politics later in life. I did so after a career in the criminal justice system, including as Director of Public Prosecutions. I entered politics not for personal gain, not for status, and not to live a life detached from the reality that most people face. I entered politics because I wanted to change our country for the better, to make it fairer, safer, more secure. And I still believe that most people who serve in public life, whether as civil servants or elected politicians, do so for the same reason. Because they believe in service. Because they believe in duty. Because they believe in the public good. But that is not why some people do it. And that is not why Mandelson did it. And that sense of duty only matters if the standards of public life are upheld. And in recent days, serious allegations and serious evidence has emerged concerning Mandelson's conduct, including his relationship with Epstein, a convicted sex offender. It had been publicly known for some time that Mandelson knew Epstein, but none of us knew the depth and the darkness of that relationship. What has come to light has raised serious questions. Information that was not known at the time of his appointment. Before he was appointed ambassador, Mandelson was asked directly about the nature of his relationship with Epstein. He was asked whether he had stayed at Epstein after his conviction. And when, later, further information came to light, he was asked whether he had accepted gifts and hospitality, about whether he had been fully transparent about the relationship. The information now available makes clear that the answers he gave were lies. He portrayed Epstein as someone he barely knew. And when that became clear, and it was not true, I sacked him. Such deceit is incompatible with public service. Let me be clear, no one is above accountability. And no one, however well-connected, however experienced, however senior, should hold public office if they cannot meet the basic test of honesty. I also want to address the publication of the information Mandelson provided during the appointment process. I understand the strength of public feeling. I share the anger that people feel when powerful individuals appear to escape scrutiny. And I want to be able to release those documents as quickly as possible. I wanted to release them yesterday, in fact, and to talk about them at Prime Minister's questions. But the police have advised that releasing certain information now could risk prejudicing a future investigation or legal process. And however frustrating from my personal point of view that is, and it is, I will not take any step, however politically tempting, however popular, that risks justice for victims. Because this is not and must never become a political game. The victims of Epstein have lived with trauma that most of us can barely comprehend. And they've had to relive it again and again. They have seen accountability delayed and too often denied. To them, I want to say this. I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him. And sorry that even now you're forced to watch this story unfold in public once again. But I also want to say this. In this country, we will not look away. We will not shrug our shoulders. And we will not allow the powerful to treat justice as optional. We will pursue the truth. We will uphold the integrity of public life. And we will do everything within our power and in the interests of justice to ensure accountability is delivered. That is what the public expects. That is what the victims deserve. And it is what I will do. Now, I'm here today in Hastings for similar reasons. Because I love this country. It is the greatest country in the world. The progress and prosperity I've seen throughout my life, the journey that I've been on personally, from a working class background to this, I owe everything to this country and its values. I've spent most of my professional life serving them, not just in politics. And I believe that pride, shared by millions, is the key not only for uniting our country, but also for finding in each other the strength to create, in defiance of an increasingly volatile world, a Britain built for all. Now, you heard it from Kevin, or I think I should address you as Mr. Hastings. And I want to thank you and everyone else like you who give their heart and soul to the ground beneath their feet. I believe in that pride. I believe in that purpose. I believe in British values, in rules that protect those in need, in the freedom to live and let live, in decency and tolerance, in respect for difference under the same flag. A common good the idea fundamental to the Labour Party that a nation is not just a collection of individuals, but rather that we're bound by values, by common endeavour, and by responsibilities that we owe one another as partners in the project of this nation. I believe in our way of doing things when it comes to integration, a British way that has always been grounded in the fairness of the two-way street, in rights and responsibilities, in contribution, that the common sense that says people who come here, who work hard, contribute to our success, embrace our rules, buy into this project, they can become not just citizens, but neighbours, friends, equals, part of us. But most of all, I believe that these values make us strong, that in a world that increasingly preys on weakness, I believe Britain is stronger as a tolerant, decent and respectful country. But we must be honest, because while I will always believe in these values, we cannot be blind to the reality that in recent years their practice has often become poor, and that when it comes to our shared responsibilities, we've taken our eye off the ball, and that our social contract is currently nowhere near strong enough to weather the storms of this world, because it's been undermined by political neglect, the scorched earth of Tory austerity, high streets, libraries, youth clubs, the places that shape a life, that bring different people together, that create the bonds of memory and pride in so many towns. They were just abandoned. Until you see now, sometimes from the very same people, a politics that has no interest in rebuilding any of that, only in exploiting the social scars. You see it in the industrialised grievance factory, in parts of social media. Miserable video after miserable video telling you that entire cities and towns, the great communities of this country, are wastelands, no-go zones. And worse, selling the lie, defied every day by millions of people in this country, that people who look different cannot really live together. I reject that completely. And you see it in politicians, like the Reform candidate for Gorton and Denton, who look at people like Rishi Sunak, Shabana Mahmood, and presumably Marcus Rashford, Shirley Bassey, Anna Sawa, and say they can't really be English or Welsh or Scottish because they are not white. An affront to British values as I see them. And I tell you, as long as I've got breath in my body, I will always fight against that politics. And on that, honestly, I never thought I would see the day when the Conservative Party would tolerate for months a man who went to Birmingham and said that the city had failed at integration because he didn't see enough white faces. That is a disgrace, and he should have been sacked months ago. But look, it's not just the right. Britain's also been let down by a mindset on the left of politics that is either too slow to defend core British values or that ducks the challenge of integration entirely, clinging to a kind of remote liberalism that is content merely to dispense transfers and targets from Whitehall rather than nurture pride, belonging and responsibility from the ground up in our communities. You know, The Labour Party is the institution that stood with working-class communities in cities like Glasgow and Liverpool, and door by door, street by street, turned a politics shaped by grievance and religious sectarianism into one of national renewal. That is our task again. Because politics in this dangerous era, it's no longer about left and right, but a contest between renewal and grievance, between those who believe society is a zero-sum competition and those who believe we can unite for the higher purpose of our community, our country, our common good. This government chooses the path of unity because that is the only way we can change Britain, the only way we can take control of our future, stand up to the world and walk forward together. And mark my words, it is a vital task. Enemies of Britain are active in this country trying to destabilise us. And so a strong society is imperative, not just on its own terms, but also for national security. To put it more bluntly, any country that cannot keep its high streets alive, its bills down, and its people feeling respected will struggle to meet the test of our times. So we must strengthen our society because it's vital for the future of this country. Now, it starts with the economy. That's fundamental. If we're going to defeat the politics of grievance, we must tackle the cost of living crisis and we must raise living standards, not just in a few cities or regions, but across the entire country. And it's not hard to understand why. If you're simply battling through the days, it's hard to look forward with hope, let alone find the strength in each other. And so all the decisions we took at the budget, getting inflation down, freezing rail fares, freezing fuel duty, slashing the cost of childcare for working parents, supporting people with their energy bills, but also investing in every community in this country, backing a proper industrial policy, raising the national minimum wage, that is all the absolute foundation of a strong society, essential for restoring hope in Britain. Second, we need to reform the state so that it recognises contribution as the common sense basis for integration, most of all on migration. Now, I know that migration is bound up with who we are. Of course it is. It's fundamental for the stories people tell about themselves, their family, their history and relationships. And I will never denigrate the contribution migrants make to our society and our story. Quite the opposite. And yet, it seems obvious to me that failures in Britain's migration system under the Tories were so shocking that they weakened trust in politics, faith in democracy to deliver what people vote for, and now, exploited by politicians of grievance, support the idea that diverse people can ever truly come together. Now, I reject that politics with every fibre in my being. But if you're serious about bringing this country together, you cannot ignore this issue. And so, yes, our reforms on migration are about taking control of our borders. But they're also about contribution. I mean, go back to Windrush, which is such an important moment in our national story. The people who came here, they weren't victims. They weren't vulnerable. Britain didn't invite them here as an act of compassion. That is liberal vanity. No, they came here because Britain needed them, because they wanted to come. And Britain wanted them to make a contribution. And they did. They helped rebuild this country. Now, I think there's far more dignity in that story, the real story, than in this kind of fairy tale of Britain's charity. There's a mutual respect in it, a fairness grounded in contribution that I believe has always been the basis of trust in migration policy for the vast majority of people in this country. And so our reforms to migration, they will boost integration, they will restore trust, and they will help return us to a situation where the migration policy cannot be exploited by people who think that whiteness is the same thing as Britishness. And third, we need to be more vigilant in asserting British values and call out those who want to divide us, whoever they are. Now, obviously, that goes for any form of extremism, whether that is extreme right ideologies and their hatred of Muslims, or Islamist ideologies and their hatred of Britain and Jews. But it also means we've got to fight a more insidious, passive tolerance. I mean, it's not hard to support the just cause of a Palestinian state without being anti-Semitic. Millions of people do that, and I'm one of them. It is the policy of this government and this country to recognise Palestine. And yet, on the marches that supposedly support that cause, you will often see clearly racist banners, anti-Semitic hate, a fact that leaves a minority community in this country scared and intimidated. A community which, let us not forget, suffered the most recent terrorist attack on these shores. How can that be right for a country with values like ours? How can it be right to turn a blind eye to racist hatred of any kind, whether victims are Jews, Muslims, or any minority? It can't. And so, frankly, we do need to be much clearer as a society about what we expect of people and the responsibilities that come with rights. And that means much stronger powers to the Charity Commission to shut down charities that promote extremism. It means tougher regulation of homeschooling, because schools are so important for integration. And so we need a higher bar for people who want to opt out of that responsibility. And it means we need to improve across the state English language provision. Now, it's a simple argument. Everyone who comes here, who lives here, should have an opportunity to learn English, because it's essential for participation in our society. And so they should be expected to learn English. And yet, for years, we've simply not asked people to do that. That is a recipe for exclusion, and frankly, for people being vulnerable to abuse and exploitation. So we will change that, and we will stand united and together against any individual or organisation that does not want to shoulder the responsibility of British values. Fourth and finally, we've got to reverse the devastating decline in our communities. Give power, agency and control to people who want to improve their community. Now, you can see the signs over here. Pride in Place, led by you, backed by the government. That is a £5 billion programme with an extra £800 million today, investing in 284 neighbourhoods in every corner of our country, including here. Because pride is the social glue, the force that holds together a community and a country. And yet, there's a paradox. This is the country where local identities, down to the village level, burn more fiercely than any other. Where accents can change over a very small distance. Where you get, amongst other things, a football league pyramid of 92 teams, 92 identities, 92 passions, and countless local rivalries. That's unique. We're a country of four nations, distinct and proud, where, as this weekend's rugby will show, tribal rivalry is part of who we are. And yet four nations who time and again run through the fire together, a country forged by the solidarity of working people. But This is also a country, and this is certainly for England, where the state is one of the most centralised in the world, and where all that ferocious pride is completely ignored by politics. Take a man some of you know, Bernard Stone Street, who I think is here. Where's Bernard? Bernard, very good to see you here. 24 years of service in the Royal Marines, I believe. Tours of the Far East, the Middle East, Europe and Northern Ireland. Now, for many of us, that may seem enough service. But not for Bernard. Because Bernard works tirelessly for Sussex, Hastings, the ground beneath your feet. He's opened a centre for veterans, where they can come and get support for mental health advice, particularly from people who've been there. He's opened a veterans cafe too, and he's looking to help homeless veterans as well. Thank you, Bernard. Or what about Miranda, who got so fed up with fly tipping and litter in Edinburgh that she started picking it up herself? And then, when people started saying they wanted to help, she set up Litter Busters. Now their community is cleaner, and that may not sound like a lot, but it makes a huge difference. It changes how you feel about your town, your future, even your country, when you look out the window and see that people care. Now, ask yourself this question. Wouldn't politics be better if we truly backed that kind of pride? And this is what the Tory Levelling Up scheme never really understood. Yes, people want investment, and this government will back them. We're rebuilding our public services, opening new nurseries, breakfast clubs, health centres, investing in community infrastructure. But investment is a means, not an end. It's about power, as well as pounds and pence, a way for communities in an insecure world to take control of their own fate. So let's regenerate the town centre in Bexhill. Let's bring a dance and arts centre to the Grimsby Docks. Invest in the youth centre in Rhyl. Run bingo nights in Coleraine. Clean up Coke Bridge. Create better sports facilities right here in Hastings. But most of all, let's do it together. Because I've always believed that people with skin in the game make better decisions about their community and their future. And so that is what we will do. A programme that backs people to change what matters to them. The very definition of a two-way street. A partnership of pride. That is how the state should work. And with my government, it will. Because I tell you, if you want to know where hope lives in Britain, it's in our communities. That is where people come together. It is where you will find our common good. And that is where we will discover once again the courage in each other. Communities backed by the state, fired up by pride, taking responsibility for the renewal of this great nation. So, whatever your politics, if you're proud of your community, join us. Because this is a cause that will give you control over your future. Strengthen us on the world stage. Create a Britain truly built for all. And show, in defiance of the politics of grievance, that we can walk forward together. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
And for reasons that I'm sure you understand, we are minded to take live any questions that Keir Starmer now takes from the assembled journalists. Just bear with us while we establish whether or not that is going to happen.
Thank you very much. I'm now going to take a number of questions from the media. Can I start with Chris from the BBC? Chris.
Thank you. Chris... Thank you, Chris Mason, BBC News. Prime Minister, why was it that a man who had already twice resigned from government and, crucially, had a publicly known ongoing friendship with a convicted paedophile was appointed by you as ambassador to Washington? And given all of this, What do you say to those in the country and those in your own party who say, frankly, that you have run out of steam?
Well, Chris, let me just address that head on and perhaps clarify something I said at Prime Minister's Questions yesterday about the relationship between Mandelson and Epstein. Because what I meant was it has been known publicly for some time that they knew each other. And that is precisely why, when we were going through the appointment process for the ambassador role, we asked questions about the nature and extent of that relationship. And what I didn't say yesterday, partly inhibited by the approach of the police, is that that is precisely why those questions were asked. Questions about the nature and extent of the relationship, whether Mandelson had stayed, as was suggested, at Epstein's premises. And the answers given to those questions were intentionally intended to create the impression that Mandelson barely knew Epstein, deliberately to create that impression. I had no reason at that stage to think that was anything other than the truth. And therefore we proceeded. What I learned in September was that it was not the truth when further emails came to light, I think Bloomberg. And having asked some further questions, including questions about whether Mandelson received gifts and benefits and hospitality, and the nature of the relationship, I sacked Mandelson from the role. Now, I regret making the decision to have appointed him in the first place. Had I known at the time what I know now or knew in September, I'd have never done it. And that's why today I've apologised for the fact that I appointed him in the first place and I believed his lies. Thank you very much, Chris. And look, we're moving forward as a country. Today, you've just heard the speech about Pride in Place, one of the most important projects that we're running, that will put money in communities right across the country. And that is the driving purpose of this government, changing lives for the better, focusing on Pride in Place, where people live in their own communities, and making sure we're utterly focused on the cost of living. Thank you, Chris. Beth, can I come to you?
Thank you. Thank you, Prime Minister. Prime Minister, we can all hear your anger, your regret, and most importantly, your apology to victims of Epstein for appointing Mandelson as your UNS ambassador. But look, whatever he said or didn't say, it has proved a catastrophic error of your judgment to put him back into your government. Some of your MPs believe you must take responsibility for this in order to restore trust in politics amongst the public. And some are saying publicly now that you should stand down because your position's become untenable. Why are they wrong? Thank you.
Well, Beth, as I've said a number of times, I regret the decision to appoint Mandelson as ambassador. He was asked questions about the nature and extent of his relationship with Epstein, and he told lies. I had no reason at the time to know they were lies. Subsequently, I found out them to be lies. And this week, we found out way beyond the lies that we found out in September. We found out what he was up to in the aftermath of the 08 crash, when most of the government and most of the country was doing its level best to make sure people didn't lose their jobs, their livelihoods and their savings. And at that time, he chose to disclose sensitive secrets to Epstein, almost simultaneously as receiving them. And that is what I meant when I said earlier about the deceit and the standards that I stand for in public life. Yes, at the time I appointed him, I got answers from him which I believed to be true. He painted a picture of barely knowing Epstein. I didn't know that was lies at the time. I regret I didn't know. I've apologised for the fact that I appointed him in the first place, having believed those lies. Thank you, Beth. Robert.
What do you say to your MPs? Some of them publicly saying this morning they think your position is untenable. What please, directly,
Firstly, let me say I understand their anger and frustration. I am angry and frustrated like them because nobody wants to see these deceits in public life. They are angry about his association with Epstein, as am I. They're angry about what he did at the tail end of the last Labour government, and frustrated, as am I, that the full information of what was asked and answered when he was appointed can't be in the public domain. That is frustrating. As I say, I had hoped to deploy some of that at PMQs yesterday because I wanted people to know what was said what I received. But frustrating that can't be done. So I understand their frustration. But we must remain focused on what we were elected into government to do, which is to change this country for the better for millions of people. And that's what we will do. And today, in Pride in Place, what we've done on the economy are examples, but only examples of what we're doing. Thank you, Beth. Robert. Well, hang on, Robert, ITV.
Prime Minister, time and again during the general election campaign, you promised to end chaos in politics. You failed miserably, and there is no one to blame but yourself. If your MPs were to decide that they wanted another leader, and if somebody else put themselves forward as leader, would you fight that?
Well, Robert, I was elected in on a mandate in 2024 to change the country for the better, and that is what we're doing. And if you look at what we've done, for example, on the economy, with inflation coming down, and the Bank of England says coming down to target in the first half of this year, with interest rates being cut now six times, which is the highest rate of reduction since the 08 crash, with the work we've done to lift 500,000 children out of poverty, that is the change that we're, and the Pride in Place work that we're doing, examples of which I've just gone through, that is what we were elected to do as a government. That is the change we're bringing about. And am I frustrated that the focus is not on that and on other things because of the misbehaviour and deceit of other people? Of course I am. But of course I am. I understand that. But I was lied to. I was lied to. Deceit. Now, am I frustrated and angry that the good work we're doing gets out of focus because of that, and that tomorrow's front pages are unlikely to be about the Pride in Place project? Of course I am. Of course I'm angry and frustrated about that. But that is the work, that is the change that will affect millions of life of lives, and I will remain focused on it. LBC, will you just... I've got Natasha from LBC.
Natasha from LBC. Prime Minister, you mentioned national security in your speech just now being vital for our future. Donald Tusk has said Poland will launch an investigation into links between Jeffrey Epstein and Russian intelligence. Would you like to do the same? And on Mandelson, obviously you are a distinguished lawyer. I think the question many of our listeners and viewers have is, when you had that evidence about Lord Mandelson handed to you, why did you then believe him?
Just on the first point, I think whether it's Poland or elsewhere, we're obviously always working with our allies on any issues of national security. On the question of why... look, the questions were asked of Mandelson, and he provided answers to those questions. They were about the nature and extent of his relationship with Epstein. They were about issues such as, did you stay at the premises? Because that was in the public domain. That was something we needed answers to. And when he provided answers to that, I had no reason to believe he was telling anything other than the truth. In September, Bloomberg produced some emails which made it clear to me and others that what I'd been told at the time was clearly not truthful, which is why I sacked it. What we've learnt this week the further deceit that has been carried out in relation to government secrets that were released during the very course of the recovery when the government was working so hard for the 08 crash. I believed what he said to me. I regret that. I apologise for having believed him. He gave answers to the questions that were asked of him. I assumed and treated those answers as true. That was obviously a mistake. Thank you. I've got Sophia from Sun.
Thank you, Prime Minister. You've spoken passionately today about victims and apologised to them. So I have to ask, even though you did not know the full extent of Mandelson's ongoing friendship with Epstein, it was never a good look at the time. Did you not personally have any reservations whatsoever about what you did know about that ongoing friendship? Any doubts, any curiosities? And do you feel confident you can ride out this storm?
Well, the original, there was a due diligence exercise that culminated in questions being asked. Because I wanted to know the answer to certain issues, that's why those questions were asked. The answer to those questions were not truthful. There was then, I should add, security vetting carried out independently by the security services, which is an intensive exercise that gave him clearance for the role, and you have to go through that before you take up the post. Clearly, both the due diligence and the security vetting need to be looked at again. I've already strengthened the due process. I think we need to look at the security vetting, because it now transpires that what was being said was not true, and had I known then what I know now, I'd never have appointed him in the first place. In relation to your question, I was elected in with this Labour government to bring about change for millions of people. That's what I intend to do. The examples today are only examples of the pride in place. That makes a massive difference to so many communities, and it's not just a question of the money we're putting into communities, it's the power we're giving to them to make the choice over what the money is used for, which is vitally important. And the work we're doing on the economy to stabilise it, which is what we've done, will be to the huge benefit of millions of people across the country. Can I have Dave from The Mirror, please? Dave
Back from Mirror. Could I just clarify on the basis of what you said today and what you said yesterday, what was your understanding of what the relationship with between Mandelson and Epstein was? I mean, were you under the impression then that he had completely broken off contact, friendship at the point of conviction? And at the point you knew that there had been a relationship in the past, you knew that this was potentially a very dangerous situation that could come back to haunt you. Did you, as it were, make a deal with the devil that you knew that this could be damaging, but at the same time, Donald Trump is equally sort of impacted by this?
No, the questions were precisely to get to that question of what was the nature and extent of the relationship, and then details about places he may have stayed. And the picture painted, the impression deliberately given by the information that was provided and the information that wasn't provided. So the information that was provided and that which wasn't was deliberately intended by Mandelson to make my team believe that he barely knew Epstein. That's the picture he painted. That was a lie. But that's the lie that he painted, and that's the basis on which we made our decision. Can I have Kieran from The Guardian?
Thank you, Prime Minister. Kieran Stacey from The Guardian. Prime Minister, I wanted to read out some of the things that Labour MPs have told us in the last 24 hours about you. One told us, "I'm personally not sure I could trust myself to back the Prime Minister in a confidence vote." Another said, "It's like Chris Pincher on steroids, it's over." Another said, "This government is on the run." One former minister said, "It's time for a fresh start, the sooner the better." Isn't the real lesson from yesterday that you can no longer command the majority in the Commons? And if so, isn't your authority fatally undermined?
Well, look, I understand the anger and frustration amongst Labour MPs about what has happened, the deceit, both in the appointment of Mandelson as ambassador and what happened at the tail end of the last Labour government. I actually share that anger and frustration. It was palpable yesterday. I'm not surprised. As I said, most people come into public life to serve the common good, actually whichever political party they're in. And we may have different approaches, different politics, different ideologies, but the vast majority of people come into public life to do their best to improve their communities, to improve their country. And so when people who've been elected into power with that mindset find out that somebody else who's held a position of power does not share that mindset, has undermined it, they're angry and frustrated, not just at the deceit and the lies in the individual cases, but because they know it undermines what they stand for, the politics that they believe in. Now, I understand that, but we are changing this country for the better. We had 14 long years of failure under the Tory government.
And we're correcting that. We've stabilised the economy. We've put a huge amount of investment into our public services. And we're rebuilding our communities. And I intend to go on doing that vital work for our country because I believe it is the absolute focus and the first importance for this government. I've got Hugo from The Eye.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Hugo Jai from The Eye paper. You've talked today about what you see as some of the successes of your government, including the Pride in Place programme. You've also issued a warning about the prospect of a Reform or Conservative government, which you say would undermine national cohesion. Is your message to your own MPs, who are now sceptical about your leadership, that removing you would destroy the work your government's done and make a Reform-led government more likely?
My message is that every minute we spend talking about anything other than the cost of living, Pride in Place, how we stabilise our economy, and how we make the massive argument that we need to make, the argument of our time, that we must unite this country, understand that to be British is to be tolerant, reasonable, compassionate and diverse, and fight for it against the toxic division of Reform. Every minute we spend not talking and focusing on that is an absolute minute wasted. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you all.
The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, there demonstrating a rather better grasp of the time junctions on my radio show than I manage to observe most days, bringing it in just under, or just over 5 minutes before the scheduled 12 noon news bulletin. I think it's going to be a little bit weird if we don't pick over the bones of what we've just heard, isn't it? It means, of course, that there will be no mystery hour this week, but and I know that will cause great upset in some corners of the country, but I go only on instinct at times like this, and my instincts are that you have a Prime Minister who is still on the ropes, metaphorical ropes, and who has attempted to save his political skin. Whether what you just heard constitutes coming out swinging or not, I do not know. But it certainly sounded, didn't it, when we first crossed, to as if he was, I mean, a lot of you certainly felt that he may have been embarked upon a resignation speech. And the fact that that was both plausible and a popular opinion in my inbox suggests that the situation is every bit as serious as people who are sometimes given to a little bit of hyperbole and exaggeration contend. So I know I sometimes come across as a bit teacherish when I say I'm only really interested if you've changed your opinion. But there's a reason why. You can see the reason why, can't you? There are plenty of radio shows where you can hear people ringing in, wanging on about Boris Johnson and Prosecco and cake, who haven't paid the slightest bit of attention to the actual changing nature of a story or indeed the available evidence or facts. Or, well, called it right. You can either ignore the truth or you can hold on to it. It's probably a bit unfair of me to ask you to formulate immediately a new opinion about Keir Starmer based upon what you've just heard. It's also true that all of the stuff about Pride in Place is going to go largely unremarked, which is a shame, because some of that was really powerful. Some of that was actually pretty close to what we try to do on this programme every day, which is to plot a course between absolutes, to plot a course between extremes. The idea that you can recognise the state of Palestine and still abhor anti-Semitism, something that many people in public discourse are very keen to make it impossible to do. You can't call for the recognition of a Palestinian state without, of course, being called anti-Semitic. And that's a brave position for him to adopt. But there will be people on the left who will be screaming at him for not recognizing genocide, and there will be people on the right who will be screaming at him for recognizing Palestine. So plotting a course between absolutes is what I feel this country needs and what many people felt Keir Starmer might be able to do. But whether or not he can do it now, with all of this hanging over him, remains, I think, a pertinent question. So, listen, it's 11:57. I don't know. I think we're going to make an executive decision to sack off Mystery Hour this week. Just give me a ring and tell me what you thought of that speech, okay? 0345 60 60 973. I would encourage you to come at it fresh, i.e. to judge and assess that speech depending upon what you actually heard rather than what you thought about Keir Starmer at the beginning of it. But I don't think going to police that too closely. I thought that was one of the best speeches he's ever given. But it may well prove to be too little too late. And I don't understand why he has to do that thing where he praises reality. He recognizes the reality of diversity. He praises the benefits of immigration. He condemns the hideous divisions that many people profit enormously from sowing in our country. He finally got around, I think, for the first time to attacking the online lies about our country, which are being perpetuated by foreign agents and actors and taken up tragically by some British-based politicians. The lies about London, the lies about the United Kingdom, which are, I'm afraid, out of control on many social media platforms. Social media platforms owned by men who lie about threats to freedom of speech in order to ensure that they, or in order to try to resist any attempts at regulation whatsoever. Some interesting news from the Spanish Prime Minister on that front that I'll share with you shortly. But let's do a good old-fashioned what did you think of what you just heard phone in, and I'll do my level best to talk a little bit less than I did in the first couple of hours. Oh, beg your pardon, I said nothing in the last hour than I did in the first hour, and work my way through as many of your contributions as possible. If we'd heard that, well, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but I wish I'd heard that speech a little sooner. Is that too little too late? Has Starmer turned the oil tanker around because it was heading for an iceberg? Or has absolutely nothing changed? Your thoughts after this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, Sir Keir Starmer has apologised to the victims of Jeffrey Epstein for appointing Lord Mandelson as the US ambassador.
I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him.
The Prime Minister's under pressure from his own MPs after admitting that he knew of Peter Mandelson's friendship with the late sex offender. The government's been forced to hand over files on his appointment to Washington after a major backlash. Speaking in East Sussex in the past hour, the Prime Minister says that he understands the strength of public feeling on the issue.
I share the anger that people feel when powerful individuals appear to escape scrutiny. And I want to be able to release those documents as quickly as possible. I wanted to release them yesterday, in fact, and to talk about them at Prime Minister's questions. But the police have advised that releasing certain information now could risk prejudicing a future investigation or legal process.
Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. Some breaking news this hour. The Bank of England has announced that it's to keep interest rates at 3.75%. It cut borrowing costs before Christmas, but inflation has risen since that decision. We'll bring you more reaction on LBC bulletins throughout the afternoon. An inquiry into the deaths of at least 30 people who died attempting to cross the Channel has concluded some of them could have been saved. Their inflatable vessel overturned on November the 24th, 2021, during one of the deadliest small boat crossings on record. Only two people survived and were found almost 12 hours after they called for help. The inquiry chair, Sir Ross Cranston, has been outlining his findings.
French authorities transferred a mobile call from a 16-year-old on board. He spoke to HM Coast Guard for about 20 minutes. He said they were, quote, in the water, unquote, and required immediate assistance. More desperate calls were made, though some calls and messages were missed. HM Coast Guard issued a Mayday relay broadcast, but a nearby French naval vessel, the Flamand, did not respond.
There have been 36 reports of children in the UK suffering suspected toxin poisoning linked to baby formula recalls. Several batches of SMA and Aptamil products were recalled last month. And the number of people in hospital in England with norovirus has fallen for the first time since the start of the year. Latest NHS figures show they filled an average of 904 hospital beds each day last week. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 were trading down 48 at 10,354. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with outbreaks of rain, heavy showers in the south of England with some hill snow in the north, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is shortly after 12 noon, 3 minutes after 12, and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. A multiplicity of opinions and reactions coming in to the studio in response to that speech by the Prime Minister, veering from, before he gave it, I thought he had to go, and now I want him to stay, right through to, before he gave it, I thought he should sit it out, and now I think he has to go. So I can't wait to get to the phones, so that we can put some flesh upon the bones of those positions, and indeed all the others that lie between them. A quick word from me, and then we'll catch up with Natasha, and then I'll either inflict a brief monologue on you, or we'll go immediately to the switchboard, depending on whether or not you've rung in with anything interesting to contribute. I have sat here a million times to observe how much I hate apologies that are followed immediately by buts and ifs. Now, normally I like big buts, I cannot lie, but not in the context of somebody who's just said, I'm sorry, but, or I'm sorry, if, known in some circles as doing a Johnson, or indeed, to be fair, doing a politician. And Starmer didn't do that. That was as full and as frank an apology as you are ever going to hear. And I don't personally, and you may scoff if you please at my naivety, I don't think that came from a place of desperation. I don't think the apology did. Whether the speech did or not is moot, but I don't think the apology came from a place of desperation. I think he is absolutely mortified at what has happened. I'm struck by the fact that the friendship with Epstein after the original conviction remains the central platform of questioning and criticism, not, oddly, the potential breach of security that some of Mandelson's reported communications with Epstein represents, because I still find myself a little bit baffled by the way in which that has assumed such epic proportions in January 2026, when it was at least deeply suspected, if not absolutely known for certain, in January 2024. But let's speak first to the journalist at that speech who asked what was, for my money, by far the best question asked by anybody. I speak of Robert Peston. I speak of Natasha Clark, the political editor of LBC, who absolutely smashed it out of the park. Big speech, Natasha. What was happening in the room where it happened?
God, James, it was really, really tense in that room just there. We're in a sort of cricket ground in East Sussex at the moment, and it's a small little room. Everyone's packed in, all these chairs, everyone's jostling. And the Prime Minister, I think, could feel that tension. He was clearly very emotional when he was talking about Jeffrey Epstein, and he obviously ripped up half of his speech to talk about the issue that is on everybody's lips today, is why did he give that man the job in the first place? And he was very passionate. I mean, he is now fighting for his political career, in a sense, back in Westminster, fighting for his job. All of these questions about reform, about division in Britain, about how he's the person to bring the country back together, they're all now linked into his leadership and whether he is the one to do it and can he turn it around. That apology, I think, was, as I agree with you, James, very heartfelt, very sincere. It didn't come with any sort of qualifications or buts or ifs. It was just, I'm sorry, I did get it wrong. There were two things I wanted to ask him about. Firstly, of course, the Russia connection, which we're all fascinated by, of these Epstein files, and whether there is a link. We heard from the Polish Prime Minister, Donald Tusk, overnight that they are going to be looking into whether that's a thing. And Keir Starmer, for the second time in 24 hours, decided to sidestep that question completely. So it's really interesting. Is there a link? Are they looking into it? We don't know. He said, of course, we're going to be working with our allies on this one. But should we be concerned about this? Yes or no? It's a pretty big question, and he's dodged it twice. And secondly, why, as a distinguished lawyer, as a barrister who has spent so many hours fighting for victims, being face to face with people who are probably lying to his face anyway, why did he believe Mandelson? Why did he believe him? And what was it that he said to him that made him believe him? So that, I thought, was quite a revealing answer there. You know, I had no reason to believe that he was lying to me. And, you know, he suggested that he wanted that vetting to be strengthened even more, so that in the future, hopefully, this will never happen again with such a top appointment. But this, James, really does get back to a question of the Prime Minister's judgment, and I think that's what MPs are really worried about back in Westminster, about what this says about the Prime Minister, about this man who, like I say, and like we've talked about so many times on your show, who has fought for victims time and time again, the underdogs, and obviously that apology, of course, I'm sure it did go some way to starting to repair that damage. But yes, how can he, as made that decision of that judgment, knowing what he knew about Epstein and those links, and why was the wool pulled over his eyes by Lord Mandelson? Overall, though, I thought, James, a very powerful defence from the PM today.
Yes, I agree with you. And, of course, as we've been discussing for the first hour of the show this morning, he wasn't party to any more or less information than anybody else. And the original appointment of Mandelson was greeted with celebration and congratulation everywhere, from Michael Gove's sitting room right through to the Parliamentary Labour Party. That may yet prove to be moot, of course. That may not matter if momentum gathers. A couple of slightly anarchy questions, Natasha, if I may. When would this speech have been scheduled? I mean, how hard would it have been to either... Because I only heard about it yesterday, but nobody tells me anything.
Well, James, actually, I've been hearing that the Prime Minister's wanted to make this speech for a couple of weeks, that it's been penciled in the diary, and that a few times they've had to move it around. He's obviously was trying to do a bit of a New Year reset when I last went to see him, when he was speaking in Reading about train fares. But this speech has been on the books for quite a long time, and it was meant to sort of be a bit of a New Year refresh sort of situation. But obviously, he keeps getting swept away by events, doesn't he?
Yes, he does, or at least caught up in them. And the second thing that intrigues me is the question of whether or not anyone's going to report anything tomorrow except the Mandelson stuff, because I liked some of the mission statement. I liked some of the conversation, some of the statements about resisting division and fighting the sort of forces of evil, if you prefer, although he didn't use that phrase. And yet nobody really in that room, as the questioning demonstrated, is going to be remotely interested in that, and that'll be reflected in reports tomorrow. So why do you think he gave the speech? And didn't just go on.
I think it's one of the only levers he can pull at the moment. He's obviously got rid of Lord Mandelson. He's stripped him of his peerages. He said sorry today. What else can he do but get on with the job and start showing what he's actually doing day to day? And obviously he's, you know, I think these all of these issues, James, I think they really do sort of fold into one. It's not just, we can't separate the two. We can't separate the Lord Mandelson scandal as it is from what's happening back in Westminster with the Prime Minister's leadership, and with the idea that in a few months' time, if the Prime Minister doesn't manage to turn this around, we could be looking at another Prime Minister, another leader of the Labour Party, and in due time we could be looking at another party, potentially Nigel Farage, becoming Prime Minister. So all of these issues, I think, are very linked. And I thought the final question to the Prime Minister today, which was about, you know, his sort of message to MPs, and is he really saying that actually every sort of time we're talking about Lord Mandelson and these other distraction issues, not talking about the cost of living, community and hope, he said every minute we're not talking about that is a message we're totally wasting. And I think he needed to get back on the front foot and show what he's actually sort of doing, and you know, talk about the issues he wants to talk about. These May elections are going to be so crucial, and he knows that he needs to start basically getting that message out there, that anti-reform message, the positive Labour message that he's hoping to sell. It's not doing incredibly well right now. The polls all show that he's not doing that well there. But he needs to get out there and make that case and make that fight. And I think he is prepared in the next few months to roll up his sleeves and do it if his MPs will give him the chance.
If his MPs will give him a chance. You mentioned two things. You mentioned Nigel Farage, and you also mentioned, of course, well, you claim that everybody is interested in the links between Epstein and Russia. I have a feeling that the first bloke is not remotely interested in any further investigation in the links between Epstein and Russia. But we'll let that pass for the time being and focus instead on whether or not, and this, I think, will be based entirely on your instincts, Natasha, rather than any ability to have spoken to anybody since the speech was delivered. How serious was the threat to his leadership an hour ago, and how much has it, if at all, diminished as a consequence of what we just heard?
I think it was a very strong speech. I don't know if it's going to be enough to allow him to escape those questions about his leadership, I'm afraid. I think MPs are looking for concrete steps. Lots of people are calling for the heads of Morgan McSweeney, his chief aide. They will be looking for other levers that the Prime Minister should and could pull to try and turn things around. They will be wanting to hear from him himself. They'll be wanting him to make assurances, guarantees, promises. Maybe that's a reshuffle. I don't exactly know what the Labour MPs are asking for, apart from calling for Morgan McSweeney's head, but they do want to see action from the Prime Minister for him to turn things around. So I think that while this speech was very good, I think it was a good first step. I think it was pretty strong and solidified him. He is still facing calls to go. And you heard that from the questions from the journalists. And I don't think, unfortunately, what he said today about Mandelson and the fact that he wasn't able to release those documents yesterday, to release that proof, means we are relying on the Prime Minister's word here. And it's the same Prime Minister's word that believed Lord Mandelson, and it is very difficult for many of his MPs to believe that word right now. They want to see far more.
The police have also come out and said that they don't want these documents to be released for fear of any investigation or prosecution, future prosecution, being compromised. So it's not exclusively Keir Starmer's word that people are being asked to believe. And his frustration sounded sincere. I suspect if Keir Starmer was a liar, he would be very, very bad at it. Unfortunately, he's very bad at telling the truth as well, but he didn't sound as if that was some sort of excuse. He sounded as if he wanted to stick it all out there, but was prevented from doing so by national security reasons, or indeed by specific and publicised instructions from the police. Crikey, what an absolute mess. And on it goes, of course, without any real sign of when it might be over. Because, and this is my final question, Natasha, there's no stalking horse at the moment, or indeed maypole, is there, around which people who want him to go could gather?
Yes, and I think that is the key, right? And I think, you know, the MPs I'm speaking to are looking over their shoulders to more senior members of the Labour Party going, what do we do? What do we do here? It's such a mess. But there are a few factors here. You know, Angela Rayner, she obviously spoke in the debate yesterday. She contradicted what the Prime Minister was saying about the Cabinet Secretary being the one to reveal what these documents did or didn't say. She stood up and made her intervention in the Commons, but she's still facing a tax probe. She is not ready for a leadership challenge. I think those people close to Wes Streeting believe that he's not going to be the one that wants to stab the Prime Minister in the back and launch a leadership coup, as it were. So I don't think that he's going to be the one to jump first. So it leads us all to be looking around going, is there anybody else that is willing to do so? And what happens next? You know, if the Prime Minister is to go and to stand down, what does that process look like? And I think, you know, we've got a couple of MPs suggesting that he should go, but it's not really, it's a trickle, not a flood. There's no cabinet ministers resigning. We're not there yet. So it is a bit of a difficulty to see how it gets from what is obviously a mess, James. Everybody knows that it's a complete mess. But from that to a new Prime Minister, there are a lot of steps we need to take first.
He who wields the dagger, Natasha, rarely wears the crown, which may explain some of the reluctance of some of the characters you mentioned to step forward and provide that rallying point. Or it may be that they actually don't want to. Natasha Clark, who many of you agree with me, asked by far the best question in that Q&A at the end of a speech that many people see as Keir Starmer fighting for his political career. I want to know what you think. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need, simply to tell me where you are now, and whether where you are now is any different from where you were at 10 o'clock this morning, or indeed 11 o'clock this morning. It's highly likely that if you're in exactly the same place that you were at 10 o'clock this morning or at 11 o'clock this morning, you will not be very interesting. But please feel free to prove me wrong. It's 12:16.
This is LBC.
Here at South Eastern, we know a bit of good news goes a long way, however big or small it may be. So we wanted to let you know that we're continuing to make improvements across our network. From sprucing up our trains and many of our stations to make your journey nicer, to improving the network to minimise delays, we're investing in making your journey with us better, one step at a time. Find out more at southeasternrailway.co.uk/betterjourneys.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Okay, done. Move that. And, oh, new ways to invest.
Okay.
Foolproof guaranteed returns. Invest today.
All right, I think I will.
Way before you seal the deal, check if it's real and if a company's authorised by the FCA.
Oh, thanks.
Search FCA Firm Checker.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new Smart Hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the Smart Hashtag 1 and Hashtag 3 are also previous What Car award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
12:18 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And of course, I don't know how much of the day he rues, but there was a perfectly competent and indeed widely admired ambassador in place in Washington when Donald Trump became president of the United States of America. Starmer decided to dispense with her services immediately and replace her with Peter Mandelson. I like this stuff, but I'm a bit of a political anorak, and I like some of the suggestions that we may never know the accuracy of, but it seems to me highly likely that preferences were expressed by the White House for the appointment of the UK ambassador, and that given that the ambassador appointed was Peter Mandelson, the preferences expressed by the White House would probably have been Peter Mandelson. Now, whether that explains why Keir Starmer fell for Mandelson's lies, I don't know. Because one of the main reasons why people fall for lies is because they want to. That might sound like a statement of the bleeding obvious, but I think it's worth pointing out. Have you fallen for lies in your life? Whose lies have you fallen for? Big lies, small lies? You fell for those lies because you wanted to. So it's chicken and egg, isn't it? Did Starmer want to send Mandelson to DC? My information is that he'd have preferred a David Miliband figure or someone like that, and it was his key advisor, Morgan McSweeney, himself a Mandelson protege, that wanted his mentor, former mentor in the job. But if word had come from a White House that Starmer has demonstrated a desperation to appease and keep sweet for good or for ill, then he might have wanted to believe Peter Mandelson's lies. I don't know. It might be something to dig into a little further tomorrow. But what did you make of all that is the question that I'm going to ask you for the rest of this hour. And we will begin in Burton-upon-Trent, whence Peter has called. Peter, what would you like to say?
Hi, James.
Hello, mate.
It's all just heartbreaking, really, isn't it? But I think before yesterday, I was kind of neutral with Starmer. I didn't necessarily think he's going to be the right guy to tackle Farage at the next election, but that's 3 years away, so give him time. I certainly wasn't demanding he resigns and stuff like that. But then when he stood up yesterday in PMQs and answered yes to that question by Kemi...
about the security services...
About whether he knew...
Did you know, yeah.
About the relationship after he was convicted, and Starmer said yes. It just made my blood boil, to be honest. Do you remember the, I don't know if you've seen the P. Diddy documentary on Netflix, but there's a certain part in that documentary where one of the victims of his, it's the most heartbreaking part, actually. He broke down in tears because she described after she was basically written off and told there was no case against him, she'd see billboards of P. Diddy everywhere. And it just made her experience worse, that seeing that her attacker was being amplified even through the horrible things he'd done to her. And it reminded me of that, because victims of Epstein must see all of the people surrounding Epstein being given jobs like envoy to the United States and feel that same feeling.
President of the United States, established and close friend of Jeffrey Epstein for years and years and years. And when you read into some of the detail, and I wouldn't necessarily encourage you to do so because a lot of it is very, very harrowing, the mystery, if that's the correct word to use, of why more victims have not done what Virginia Giuffre did becomes pretty clear, in that they had good reason to be in fear of their life on many occasions. And there is something hideous about how absent much of that is from this coverage. And that's why Starmer, again, in keeping with his track record and his proven priorities, was at great pains to apologise to those women, to those victims, Peter, today.
Yeah, and I think that's what... It was specifically that line he said, apologising to the victims, that made me think, OK, give him a chance. At least give him a chance until the report comes out to see if there's actually more to it than Starmer said. And also the bit where Starmer... Because yesterday I was under the impression that the lies he was talking about with Mandelson was about the national security stuff. But today he clarified in his speech that what he means is he asked for specific information about his relationship with Epstein after the conviction, and Mandelson lied about that and made it sound like he hardly knew him.
Sure, the financial alleged information passed on regarding finances, nobody knew about. I mean, it wouldn't have been in a position for Mandelson even to have been asked about it. So what I imagine happened, and we may find out, is that he would have said something like, what about this JP Morgan bloke saying that you were there during Epstein's incarceration? And Mandelson would have said something like, well, respectfully, Prime Minister, why on earth would the head of JP Morgan know anything about my accommodation arrangements when I'm visiting New York City? I can categorically assure you that this is an absolute heap of beans. Mandelson being, of course, a brilliant liar. But again, that doesn't let Starmer off the hook that says, did he want to believe him? This is why I thought Natasha's question was so good, about his carefully honed, legal instinct so acute and so well honed that he became director of public prosecutions, not seeing through the barefaced and blatant lies of Peter Mandelson. And one explanation as to how that could have happened would be because Starmer really wanted to believe him, which is usually the circumstance that explains why all of us end up being misled or bamboozled by liars, because we want to believe them for a whole heap of reasons, by the way. Peter, thank you. So the first shift, the first pendulum swing from he's got to go or a position of neutrality right through to, no, I feel more warmly towards him now than I did before the speech. Here's a little question for you before we go to Dean, who's in Durham. Who can remember what actually did for Boris Johnson finally? I'm going to give you some clues. It wasn't the fact that he slipped the company of his security officers when he was foreign secretary and went to party in a castle owned by a KGB spy. That didn't do for Boris Johnson's political career. He went on to become prime minister after that happened. It wasn't the fact that he subsequently ennobled people and raised people to the House of Lords about whom the security services had expressed profound concerns. He waltzed through that. It wasn't the fact that when Owen Paterson was found to have breached parliamentary standards, the response of Boris Johnson and his cronies was to attack the parliamentary standards, set up the Save Owen Paterson Society and gathered in an upstairs room at the Garrick Club with various luminaries from his time at the Daily Telegraph in an attempt to set fire to the rule book and restore Owen Paterson to Parliament. That didn't do for him. That wasn't why he finally had to walk the plank. It wasn't because his various colleagues found to have breached the ministerial code received no censure or sanction from the Prime Minister, but instead received support, most obviously in the case of Priti Patel, about whom he instructed colleagues to form a ring when she was found to have breached the ministerial code egregiously, I think for the second time. That isn't what did for him. It wasn't even when Downing Street became the address in the United Kingdom at which the, by far, the highest number of breaches of COVID law were committed. His own address becoming the address at which by far the highest number of breaches of COVID laws, which of course were written by his government, had actually been breached. It wasn't the puking, it wasn't the partying, it wasn't the suitcases full of booze. It wasn't even the lying to Parliament about it that finally persuaded Conservative MPs to get rid of Boris Johnson. I'm mentioning all of this not to remind you how massively different the moral universes occupied by Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer are, but to remind you that what does for a politician finally is often nowhere near the biggest straw on the camel's back. It's simply the last straw on the camel's back, and that is where the cliche comes from. I don't know whether I've ever clocked that before, but the straw that breaks the camel's back is rarely, if ever, the heaviest straw in place. It's just the one that tips the scales into a position of unsustainability. So I wonder if you can actually remember. And I can't remember some of the things I've even missed off that list. Yes, I can, of course. The two independent advisers on ethics that resigned in disgust at Boris Johnson's absolute absence of ethics. Extraordinary that you'll still hear people claim that he went over a slice of cake and a glass of Prosecco, when that list of things I've done would have ended any previous prime ministerial career. That's what I mean by cults. And I'm afraid it is a bunch of cults that would be defending Boris Johnson's eventual departure from Downing Street, as I heard a caller to Nick do this morning, with presumably absolutely no memory of events or of what actually happened. So there's a long list of things. Two ministerial advisers resigning in disgust at his approach to ethics. And none of those were the reasons why he finally went. Can you remember what it was that finally did for Boris Johnson? Because in the great scheme of things, it was relatively minor compared to all of the other transgressions that we've just listed. And that's really interesting this afternoon, because Starmer's list are questions of competence, not morality. And that makes me wonder whether his position might be a little bit safer than I thought at 10 o'clock this morning. The phone lines are open. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. We'll go first after the news to Dean in Durham. After Dean, of course, it could be you. What did you make of that speech? Or just give me the overview. Don't ring in with an answer to the question of what it was that finally did for Boris Johnson. I'm taking your texts and your WhatsApps on that. As Alan points out, it's a bit like Buckaroo, James. It's not the previous things that have been piled on the donkey's back, or indeed the camel's back. It's the final straw that potentially breaks it, and also it's still inviting your views on the bigger picture and just how big the picture is. I'll say it again: 6,000 times Donald Trump is mentioned in the Epstein files. Keir Starmer mentioned barely, if at all, and yet it's his career that is potentially on the skids, while Trump lies about having been absolved by documents that contain allegations too hideous for me to repeat on a family radio program. What a tangled web we weave. Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for appointing Peter Mandelson as the US ambassador. The Prime Minister is under pressure from MPs after admitting he knew of Mandelson's friendship with the late sex offender. The base rate of interest will remain at 3.75%. The Bank of England cut borrowing costs before Christmas, but inflation has risen since that decision. And an inquiry into the deaths of at least 30 people who died attempting to cross the Channel has concluded some of them could have been saved. Their inflatable vessel overturned on November the 24th, 2021, during one of the deadliest small boat crossings on record. LBC weather, cloudy for most without breaks of rain, heavy showers in southern England, hill snow in the north, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Tesco Insurance are driving down the cost of motoring with 10% off car insurance. Take out a car insurance policy before the 15th of May 2026 and you'll get 10% off with club card prices. We offer a range of cover options so you can choose the one that's right for you. Save 10% when you buy or renew a car policy with Tesco Insurance. Search Tesco Car Insurance and get a quote direct today. Club card required. Excludes add-ons. T's and C's apply.
Most cars are designed for the road. The Mazda CX-30 is designed for you. Our stylish and compact SUV is available with 0% APR when ordered before the 31st of March. Mazda, crafted with Japanese soul. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 30th of June 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
12:33 is the time, and what did you think of that is the question. Of course, if you didn't hear the speech, then there are a million reasons to keep listening, but rather fewer reasons to ring in. So let me give you a couple. Where do you think Keir Starmer is now, as a consequence of the events that are unfolding, if not as a consequence of the speech that you just mentioned? I may be doing Donald Trump a disservice. It may be many more than 6,000 times that his name appears in the documents, but remember, we haven't seen half of them. And here's a little line for you from the President of Spain, Pedro Sanchez. We must speak clearly about the management of platforms such as X and the vision of figures like Elon Musk. Freedom of expression is not the right of a magnate to buy the public debate and manipulate it through algorithms that amplify confusion. Spain will move forward with legislation under which technology executives will assume direct criminal liability for serious violations on their platforms. The era of hiding behind servers is over. I can't remember when we first suggested on this program that these platforms needed to be treated like publishers, but it looks as though that day may be edging ever closer, which, and I am not going to tire of labouring this point to you, that is why they're lying about your freedom of speech being threatened, because their freedom to lie and spread racist bile and incitement is finally under threat from lawmakers and the forces of democracy, and they're chuffing terrified. That is it. That is the end of it. I'm afraid that's the tweet, as we used to say. That's why they're lying about your freedom of speech. And you know, it'd be interesting to see which British people join in. But the reason is that they don't want to be treated like publishers. They want to be free to continue publishing racist bile, hideous incitement, white supremacist, Hitler admiration, and all the rest of it without any sanction or regulation whatsoever. And in order to perpetuate that possibility, they're going to pretend that your freedom of speech is under threat. So kudos to Pedro Sanchez for calling it out. Dean in Durham has probably fallen asleep. Dean, can you remember why you picked up the phone in the first place?
Hi, James. Yeah, I can. Thank you.
Go on.
So, ironically, I was this morning looking to remove my membership to the Labour Party. And the only reason I couldn't was because there was some website problems. But it gave me a chance to actually listen to the speech.
Fantastic.
It was brilliant. But it did give me time to listen to speech. And less the speech and more his reactions afterwards to the questions reminded me why I like Keir Starmer. Mm. And although he's not an emotional man, you can feel his frustration and his disappointment and the fact that he really was lied to. And just how that kind of resonates kind of with me. But I thought, you know what, maybe I can give him like another chance. Maybe I can see where he's coming from on here. Now, on the background, he can only ever rely on the information he's provided. Does he know there's a relationship with Epstein? Yes. He has to weigh that up against the pragmatism of, I need an ambassador over there who can work with Donald Trump. And if Trump's regime has recommended him or suggested him, we know that that's not a suggestion. That's an order. And
we're not
in a position, because of Brexit and other things like that, to really stand up, to really say, no, we do our own thing here. We have to kind of toe the line. And that's kind of what I want to see come out of this is, the risk assessment, the decision-making that was, on one hand, we've got Mandelson, who we can't really trust, who we know there is a problem with, but is it manageable given the information we've got? Yes. Versus, if we don't appease Trump, if Trump is not happy, if we don't have somebody who can manage that relationship, we'll lose 10,000 jobs in steel, or price of eggs goes up X amount, or, you know, whatever it is, that affects what Starmer was talking about in his speech, the whole people's quality of life needs to improve to stop this threat from the right.
Well, this is what animates me at the moment, despite much disappointment with what Keir Starmer has done. The idea that we would let the ghouls and weirdos who brought us austerity, Brexit, Boris Johnson and Liz Truss, another bite of the cherry by putting Farage or Badenoch in Downing Street is actually something if I hadn't lived through the last 10 years, I wouldn't actually believe that anybody was even contemplating it. But of course they are. It's weak gruel when it comes to support for Keir Starmer, by whom I feel I oscillate between being almost unjustifiably optimistic that somehow he'll discover a gear that he hasn't discovered before, and profoundly disappointed by many of the things that he's done already. But I can't argue with much of what you've said. And almost to prove, well, not to prove the point, but just to labour the point, can you remember what did for Boris Johnson finally, Dean?
I can't, because the list was so long, like you said,
Yeah, and it's a small straw.
I would just say, though, James, that
the
one thing I would like to see him do, though, is move from reactive to proactive.
Everything he did today.
Yeah, well, this is it, but it still seems like it's a reaction to things that happened yesterday. If when things first come out, he'd been the one to fire Mandelson immediately, and he'd been the one to say, okay, we need to remove your Labour Party membership at that point, you know, and he'd been the one to say at the beginning, we need to reevaluate your lordship and everything else like that, rather than let other people
I mean, it's tricky because the events overtake the opinions, don't they? And some of the things that emerged this weekend put an entirely different complexion on things that had gone before. But yes, at the first sign of trouble, Lance the Boyle would probably be fairly solid advice that he probably wishes he'd followed. Dean, great call. I'm grateful for it. And I'm getting some great messages in as well, many of which addressing a similar theme of the scheduling of this programme. So we have, of course, binned off Mystery Hour this week as a consequence of the gravity of the situation we're discussing. I said at 10 o'clock this morning, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we'll be presiding over the disappearance of yet another Prime Minister in the course of today's show. I think that likelihood has disappeared. But Brian writes, this is the best Mystery Hour ever. It's full of mystique and questions that no one has the answers for. Greg takes a slightly different view and writes, what is this, James? Misery Hour? I presume that's a typo. Thank you, Dean. Imisalua is in Fulham. Imisalua, what would you like to say?
Well, it's actually not morning anymore. Afternoon. How are you?
It's morning somewhere. I'm very well. What's on your mind?
We've discussed this previously, I think, where I said that I don't think that Keir Starmer had a lot of choice when it came to Mandelson. You said it earlier. But I really do think he was between a rock and a hard place. Like, you needed somebody who was as slimy as Trump, who understood him, who got him. Unfortunately for Keir Starmer, the state capture of the news isn't quite complete here yet. Mm. And the state capture of Parliament isn't quite complete here yet. So he doesn't have the leeway that Trump has. He can't do whatever he wants and get away with it. Trump can. So I don't think that him choosing Mandelson was a mistake. I do think that he took into account the fact that he was friends with that scene. I do think he thought it would work in his favour. Unfortunately, you had to know that something like this was going to come and bite you in the bum, for want of a better phrase, later on.
Yeah, there is no better phrase.
My second thing is, as somebody who is around a lot of people from in the diaspora, so migrants, all of this talk about diversity, I think is absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish. This Labour government has made it so difficult for people who want to come here, live here, work here. I just got married. My husband doesn't have a British passport. It's just more difficult. So I just don't believe it. I don't believe it. Make it easier for people who are, quote unquote, doing the right thing and who are seeking asylum or who do want to work here. Make it easier for those people. And I'll start to believe you when you talk about diversity. Because last time I checked, diversity means people coming from other countries. It means people coming from other countries, bringing their ways of life.
I mean, this has been picked up on by people on social media, in that he says some very welcome and very overdue things about the value of immigration, and then says these very odd things about British values and the liberal attitude to immigration in the past having been a negative. It's very, very hard to ride both of these horses, but I suppose what he's trying to do, perhaps it's a terrible mistake, but you understand why he's trying to do it, is speak to people who are currently leaning towards Farage and his friends who aren't actually racist. That's what he's trying to do. I don't know if there are any people in that.
I disagree with you so much. People that lean towards Farage and his friends,
I'm not sure there are any people who lean towards Farage and his friends who aren't racist, but those are the people Starmer's trying to reach. They may not exist, but the only way you can make sense of him trying to ride both of these horses is by thinking that he's going to get everyone on one horse, on the other horse, by acknowledging their, quotes, legitimate concerns, end quotes.
Yeah, I think the whole legitimate concerns thing is, you're right to put it in quotes, because I personally don't believe it exists. I think if all it took for you to move towards the right and move towards reform was for Nigel Farage, who is, I mean, you've called him all the names that I can use to describe him, so we'll leave that there. If all it took was him, you were far more racist than you ever thought. And I think that's the thing about racism, and we, like, unconscious minds, all these things. Everybody says, oh, well, you know, it's just these little things, and, you know, they're just a bit different from us. I'm black. I've been hearing this for God knows how many years. I've always believed that there was a pocket of racism in this society that is always bubbling. It's always there. It's always, like, we talked about microaggressions. It's always there. So sometimes I'm just not surprised. I think what shocks me is the surprise that people feel when, like, oh my gosh, racism was always there. Any person of colour could have told you this. So
I hear
it
you,
and
well, almost any. I don't know that some of the people who would dispute their own Englishness would necessarily join what you describe, what seems to me to be a self-evident truth. And then, of course, we've moved away from columnists pretending that calling people racist or levelling accusations of racism was somehow hysterical or wrong. One of them, I can't remember whether it was Dick Littlejohn or Rod Liddell, would spell it with a W. So people call you racist as if you're trying to undermine the gravity of the accusation. But when you've got people like Honest Bob Jenrick literally complaining about the colour of people's faces, and that Sarah Poaching woman complaining about brown faces like yours, in fact, Imi Salua, on television adverts, then you know that what was bubbling away in the background for the course of your life is now front and centre. And I can't actually remember how strenuously Starmer called for Badenoch to sack Jenrick when he made those hideous comments, albeit that he was suggesting that she should have done it much, much sooner today. May I congratulate you on your nuptials, though? I didn't know about that.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I've been married for a week.
That's incredible. So this is literally the highlight of your honeymoon, this call, getting caught talking.
Honestly, absolutely.
Be very careful.
Highlight.
I want you to be married for more than a week. So let's spark that conversation immediately. Thank you. It is 12:45.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
The Prime Minister apologises to victims of Epstein and his associates. Who else should Keir Starmer apologise to? And the strange abduction of a US TV anchor's mother. What happens when a family member goes missing?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like switching from Sainsbury's to Lidl and saving £32 on this week's Big Shop at lidl.co.uk/save more. Which means a stocked up fridge of big brands, award-winning own brands and your fresh five a day with extra helpings encouraged. Lidl, more to value. Prices check 2nd of the 2nd, 26. Sainsbury's also sell other products. See online for more details.
Thinking of buying a new electric car? It can be tough to know where to start. Luckily, the experts have done the work for you. The new smart hashtag 5 has just been announced as What Car's best family electric SUV of the year. And did we mention that the smart hashtag 1 and hashtag 3 are also previous What Car award winners? Work smart, not hard. Test drive Smart's award-winning EV range at smart.com.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Cost and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it!
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
The Volkswagen Fantabulous, Fandabby-dozy, Fandang-a-ding-dong fortnight is here.
Stop. We've been through this, Harry. It's the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight. Much snappier.
Oh, OK. From the 2nd to the 16th of February, the Volkswagen Fantastic Fortnight gives you an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit on top of existing offers on the Polo, Golf, Tiguan and our all-electric ID 3, 4 and 5 with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer now. Hurry, offer ends 16th of February. Better?
Perfect.
Indemnities may be required. Volkswagen Financial Services.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It's 12:48. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Let's rattle through a few more calls before Sheila Fogarty gets here. Stuart's in Brighton on the question of, the speech, the story, the scandal, the ambassador and the prime minister. Stuart, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. First of all, I'd like to say I'm not a Labour Party supporter, but I do remember listening to your interview with Keir Starmer, your podcast, about his early years, and being very impressed by how he came across then. And I'm personally a little bit sick of all the attacks on Keir Starmer that have been happening from lots of angles in the last year or so. I think the problem is he's got a very different leadership style, and I think in the past we've become very used to Trump, Farage, Johnson, etc., becoming populist figures. And anyone who takes a more considered approach, more of a backbreaking approach, is vilified for not being strong enough and having a great personality, etc., which is totally wrong. I do think that, as regards the Mandelson problem, as a recruiter with 40 years' experience, I do know that he cannot possibly be held to book for the fact that that Mandelson was actually recruited for that role, because actually the security services, he said in his speech just now, didn't actually warn him off. So I think there'd be conversations would have been had, partly to appease Trump, but he probably was the right person to put into place at that point, because he would actually get closer to Trump. Now, of course, it's all appalling given what's come out, and absolutely Mandelson should face charges, etc., as is happening. But this is not an individual issue of Keir Starmer. I think we need to actually get behind, even if I say I'm not a Labour Party supporter, get behind Keir Starmer. He's assembled, from my point of view, a skilled bunch of people in a cabinet, and should be allowed to get on and run the country. These problems here they inherited can't be got rid of in a couple of years, possibly not even 5 years, but this gives them a bit of a chance to get on with their jobs and do it properly.
Yeah, and I mean, you can add to that that the people most responsible for the problems are now pursuing the narrative of Britain having been somehow broken by the Labour government, as opposed to by them and their ludicrous policies and enthusiasms with, you know, people who were fans of Boris Johnson, Liz Truss and Brexit, claiming that Keir Starmer is the source of all our problems.
And you've alluded to that in one of your books as well, haven't you? The people that broke Britain, so yeah.
I hope so. I love the idea of a recruitment consultant having sympathy for a boss being absolutely lied to by a potential hire.
Yeah. Well, in the end of the day, it depends how ethical you are as a recruiter, but that'll be another conversation. But as far as I'm concerned, in terms of his skills, his value is the most important thing. And
yes, I agree with you. Yes. The danger is that if he came in selling an alternative to what you've described, an alternative to snake oil, then falling for a snake oil salesman is a particularly bad look. It becomes a doubly bad look when it is, until you remind us of the recruitment angle, which is who here has got an antennae that's absolutely infallible. And Mandelson is obviously extremely good at an inveigling and at pulling the wool over people's eyes. I don't think anybody honest can really believe that if Starmer had known half of what has come out since he appointed Mandelson, then he would still have appointed Mandelson.
No, I think the problem being is that it's such a messy game with Trump, and also the fact that various people like Mandelson perhaps were being manipulated, as we potentially think, with 9,000 references to Russia in a recent paperwork, 1,000 references to Putin. That may be the wool's being pulled over our eyes by external forces and who are lapping it up, all this chaos. And I'm not into conspiracy theories around this. I think that's just fact.
You don't have to be. It's not an opinion. It's counting. You mentioned the number of references there. You mentioned the fact that Donald Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, following on from Andrew Marr's comments earlier this week about the necessity of a proper investigation into Russian influence. The problem is, of course, that we should have had a proper investigation into Russian influence in 2017, 2018, 2019, and every year until 2026, when it would still be welcome, albeit very, very long overdue. It's extraordinary that a man leading in the opinion polls can have been busy buddies with a bloke who was literally taking money from a Kremlin stooge to influence European and British democracy without being held properly to account for it. But, Stuart, thank you. Martin is in Lyme. Martin, what made you pick up the phone?
Hi, James. Hello, over the years, in my 40-year career, I had hired many, many people. And there's always a process, and at the end of that process, you hire the best person for the job once you've vetted all the candidates and you've spoken to them.
Yes.
What I don't understand here is that Mandelson had never been on the candidates list, given his chequered past in Parliament, but also what everybody knew about what he had been up to. And yet, you know, for some reason, Starmer's not answering that question. We know post
He has answered that question. I mean, this isn't a criticism of you, because it may turn out to be a very inadequate answer, but he was sufficiently reassured by Peter Mandelson that the stuff that has emerged previous and subsequent to his appointment, the stuff that emerged previous wasn't true. I think Mandelson sat there, Martin, looked him in the eye and said, this isn't true. Of course I didn't do that. And I didn't Starmer allude to that when he mentioned staying in Epstein's property? And Mandelson, which a lot of liars do, Boris Johnson did this he's done this every single day of his life. He's going to say the thing that he's pretty confident, although it's not true, they'll never be able to prove it. So Mandelson would say, I didn't stay at Epstein's house, even if this bloke from JP Morgan says that I did. I didn't. And you're never going to be able to prove it. And we're back to the question of whether Starmer wanted to believe him too much to push the point or to labour the point. But if you told me something, it makes me something different, doesn't it, to tell you that you're a liar, to say that I don't believe you?
It does, James, but my question is, Mandelson should never have got the opportunity to even interview for that job or even to be asked that question.
Yeah, but then we're back to Trump. We're back to where we started. There's no other president in the history of the United States of America who would have been the reason why Mandelson got on the list. But you set a thief to catch a thief. Who are you going to send to Donald Trump's court? The most honest stand-up guy you know, or a weasel?
But then you're playing into the Americans' hands, surely.
No, you're not. You're sending a weasel to work with weasels.
We're in a very bad place if that's
Yeah, but that's a place that Starmer's trying to navigate. It's not a place that Starmer's created. Everyone thought it was a brilliant idea. Michael Gove, who knows a thing or two about weasels, he thought it was a brilliant idea for precisely this reason. You send a weasel to work with weasels. You don't send a... What's the opposite of a weasel, Martin?
No idea, gerbil? James. I'll leave it to you.
A fluffy gerbil. Yeah, you don't send a chinchilla. You don't send a chinchilla, Martin. You send a bloody weasel.
Fair point, James.
And that's where we started, and it's where we're ending, and that's not a mistake or a coincidence, because the idea that it was a very good appointment until it wasn't is probably the biggest takeaway that any of us can have from this entire story, because half of me agrees with Martin, he should never have been in the room at all. But the other half remembers what the job was and who the job involved and where he was going, to an administration, to a regime in the United States where proximity to, affection for, long histories with Jeffrey Epstein seems almost like a prerequisite to getting a job, let alone an in spite of, it's a because of. So who do we know who's part of that universe? Oh, old Mandelson. Albeit that position gets somewhat undermined if Mandelson was simultaneously insisting that he had absolutely nothing to do with any of them at all. Thank you, Martin. The double M's. Let's go to Maureen, who's in Solihull with the last word of the day. Maureen, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. First time caller and all that. Hello.
And all that. Okay, you've got 2 minutes. I'll shut up for a while.
Okay. Yeah. I'm angrier than before he made the speech.
Okay.
Firstly, on the diverse, and he was talking about Farage and those on the left. Well, he has so much indulged in the same language. Yeah. Island of strangers, da-da-da-da-da. And on Mandelson, straight off, it was like, oh, my goodness, are you serious? Now, yeah. I voted Labour. I genuinely thought Keir Starmer would make a good prime minister. And then after getting in, things started going down. But when the island of strangers, it just finished it for me. And ultimately, if he was the man with the integrity that he pledged to us, that he would prove to us that politicians weren't all the same, he was going to clean up. And yet here we are. I would respect him today if he said, I've made a mistake and this is on me. Ultimately, I'm responsible. I shall stand down and let somebody else to have a look who could take over from me. Because, like you've said many a time, how long ago was it that when politicians would resign? Because even if it wasn't really, really their fault or something, ultimately, he is responsible for who is employed in his government, and it's for him. I would respect him if he said, yeah, listen, I've monumentally made a mistake, and it's not right for me.
I can't stay. Yeah, I hear you. I like it. And it's a very helpful corrective to some of the other contributions that we've heard so far, because if anybody's 100% certain that he should stay or go, then they haven't been paying attention, although Maureen, they're 99% certain that he should go, with one of the most persuasive contributions of the show so far. Just a little reminder of that long list of transgressions for which Boris Johnson didn't lose his job, or indeed lose the support of the client media in this country, which continues to pay him hundreds of thousands of pounds a year to write about bus drivers in the Daily Mail at a time of epic national and international peril. He finally went because he had promoted a bloke known to have been what we call handsy, pincher by name, pincher by nature. That was it. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. So it's not necessarily the story that does for prime ministers, or the scandal. The latest scandal can be the smallest in a very long line, but still the one that breaks the back. We'll find out in the next few days whether or not this scandal is going to do the same to Starmer, but I suspect not. That's it from me for another day. You can, of course, listen to the whole show on Catch Up on Global Player or the LBC app, all the usual gubbins. Tom Sorbitt will be with you at 4 on LBC, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. At 3 today, I want to focus on what it's like for a family when somebody goes missing. Prompted by this story in America, America is gripped by the disappearance and assumed abduction, according to the police and the family, of the mother of TV anchor Savannah Guthrie. 170,000 people are reported missing in the UK alone every year. What is it like when that happens to you? There can be all kinds of reasons for somebody going missing. Some of them of their own volition. What is it like when that happens in a family? But first to the Prime Minister's apology. Apologies plural, really, to the victims of Epstein and his associates for believing Peter Mandelson's lies. Who else do you think Keir Starmer should apologise to? I've got a few thoughts.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer has apologised to the victims of Jeffrey Epstein for appointing Peter Mandelson as US ambassador. The Prime Minister has told LBC Mandelson was questioned about his friendship with the late sex offender at the time.
When he provided answers to that, I had no reason to believe he was telling anything other than the truth. I believed what he said to me. I regret that. I apologise for having believed him. He gave answers to the questions that were asked of him. I assumed and treated those answers as true. That was obviously a mistake.
Sir Keir is under pressure from MPs after admitting he knew of their friendship and has handed over files relating to Mandelson's appointment. Peter Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. A sea captain has been jailed for 6 years for killing a crew member when his ship crashed into an oil tanker off the coast of Yorkshire. Russian national Vladimir Motin had been on watch duty when the Solon collided with the Stena Immaculate in March last year. 38-year-old Mark Angelo Pernia, who was working on the ship's bow, died instantly in the fire. An inquiry has found the deaths of at least 30 people who died while attempting to cross the English Channel could have been prevented. Their inflatable vessel overturned in November 2021 during one of the deadliest small boat crossings on record. Only two people survived and were found almost 12 hours after they called for help. Issa Mohammed Omar was one of them.
Everyone fell into the sea. It's very painful when someone is dying inside the water. If a rescue would come quickly, I believe half of those people would be still alive today. We feel like we were like treated like animals.
The number of people in hospital in England with norovirus has fallen for the first time since the start of the year. Latest NHS figures show they filled an average of 904 hospital beds each day last week. And the Bank of England has held interest rates at 3.75% after inflation rose in December. The bank cut borrowing costs before Christmas, but the Consumer Prices Index rose to 3.4% at the end of last year. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 52 points at 10,350. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, cloudy and breezy with outbreaks of rain pushing northwards and westwards this afternoon. Sleet and snow over northern hills, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
At Tesco Mobile, club card prices are frozen, so your contract price stays on ice. Get the Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra with 25 gigs of data for just £46.99 a month for 36 months with club card prices, saving you a massive £486. And it stays like that for the length of your contract. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 24th of February. Club card and 36-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there, good afternoon to you. I want to talk about apologies, specifically which apologies you think Keir Starmer needs to give. He rightly, I think, apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims today in a hastily changed speech at a launch of something called Pride in Place. We'll hear more about that with Natasha Clark in just a moment, LBC's political editor. But I think he and others owe an apology to a number of people, including us, the voters. Because, and by the way, the other people I would say are owed an apology are people who, which this includes voters, people who lost their houses during the crash, people who lost their businesses or almost went bankrupt during the crash, just ordinary people going about their business massively affected by the collapse of the banking system, or the near collapse of the banking system that was sustained then by, you guessed it, taxpayers' money. It's easy to forget that, or if you weren't around when that happened, I certainly was. I was reporting on it daily at the time. It felt at some points that chancellors and shadow chancellors were never out of our studios when it came to that financial crash. And I remember Nick Clegg, in an interview when he became, or it was a year into his time as leader of the Liberal Democrats, I did an interview with him in which he described the night, middle of the night, that he got a call from David Cameron and Gordon Brown to say, come to Downing Street, bring your financial team with you, we need to talk. It was that serious, that it was all hands to the pump about what to do and to stop the collapse of the banks and the collapse of our economy. Really serious times for so many people. And I think all of us deserve an apology about the sustaining of and the upholding of Peter Mandelson through all of that. And I know we didn't know, not even the Prime Minister knew, the current Prime Minister knew, and even then Gordon Brown clearly didn't know precisely the nature of the man he was dealing with, because he brought him back into government as well. But we are owed an apology as well, I think, for what's gone on here, because it's making our country look foolish, it's made our Prime Minister look foolish and credulous. And I think it's taking a huge amount of attention and government energy away from the things that we know we put them there for. We know that we needed a government that could really take this country by the scruff of the neck and start the process of fixing it, which Keir Starmer and others insist that they are doing. But I do believe that the apology, yes, to the victims, absolutely necessary. But I think he owes an apology to a few more people. Who do you say they are? 0345 6060973. The number to call, you can text 84850. Is he out of the woods yet? Natasha Clark joins me, LBC's political editor, who was at that speech that Keir Starmer gave in Hastings today. It ended up being not quite about what it was supposed to be about. Not wholly anyway, Natasha.
Yes, Sheila. So the Prime Minister was meant to be giving this speech today about what he calls the Pride in Place scheme, basically government money into what they call sort of left behind communities, like here in Hastings, where they can put it into community projects, whether that's high streets, litter pickers or anything else. And the Prime Minister, I thought, talked really powerfully about exactly why that moves him and why that drives him in politics, and how he thinks that the Labour Party and the government can help provide that unity that the country so deserves. And that hope, but of course totally overshadowed by this political moment today. The Prime Minister is instead giving the fight of his life, trying to save his own political future, as MPs back in Westminster tell him, I'm sorry, Prime Minister, I think your time might be up. And he started this speech today by issuing a full, wholehearted apology, I thought, to the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, saying that he was sorry that he had appointed Lord Mandelson as the US ambassador when he knew about their relationship.
I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him.
And Sheila, I thought it was quite a passionate and actually quite an angry first section of his speech, when he's talking about Lord Mandelson, talking about why he felt that he'd let the country down, and really giving that both barrels to him. And you could hear the frustration in his voice that he was having to talk about this rather